XL Primetime with Josie Hacker, Matt Hayes, and Leon Searcy on 1010XL.
Welcome in the noon hour. We got all sorts of things to get into today, a Monday. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Beautiful weather. I can't get enough of it. Just keep it coming. I don't need any rain right now. I just need all this beautiful sunshine. You got Brooks Koepka with his now fourth major, which we will definitely delve into. We'll say hello to Mark Carnevale on the 2 o'clock hour, a guy who was on the grounds up at Bethpage State Park, the black course, and get his take on just what happened on the back nine when Brooks Koepka really started to wobble and you thought, oh, no. Will this be a major collapse? Well, he was able to hang on. We got plenty of football to get into, NBA postseason. We got a good one last night between Toronto and the Milwaukee Bucks, but unfortunately we haven't had a good one out there on the west side. Portland is just getting hammered by Golden State, so it looks like it'll probably be a clean sweep when it's all said and done in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, the crazy thing for Portland, I mean, you look at it, they have had double-digit leads in Game 2 and Game 3 of that series, and they have not been able to hold on. Golden State playing very well without Kevin Durant. Steph Curry looks like the Steph Curry of old. They're up 3-0. I don't know if they close it out tonight. Maybe Portland rallies and gets one tonight. I think Golden State would clearly close it out in five. But, yeah, Milwaukee-Toronto 2-1 now. That's a really good game last night. It was fun to watch. I'll tell you, I'm happy that game happened last night because there were a lot of angry people on planet Earth last night when it came to television viewing. All right, it started with people all up in arms about the ending of American Idol, but that wasn't near the big story. The big story was Game of Thrones. Again, I'm not a Game of Thrones guy.
Anybody here Game of Thrones?
No.
My goodness. Twitter was ablaze last night with just furious anger about the way Game of Thrones ended. I know the way American Idol ended also was angry. I'm trying to think if I've ever been frustrated or upset by the ending of a TV show. Like they were one night ago, to the point where I guess there's a petition. This has been circulating for the last couple of days that's got over a million signatures for Game of Thrones to just redo season 8.
Yeah, it's
for so many people that were upset with it.
It really is.
That's where we are in life right now.
Just think about it. In and of itself, they're going to go ahead and say however much money you spent on it, we didn't like it, let's put pen to paper, and you go do it again. That's insane.
Now, I'll tell you, I was a How I Met Your Mother guy. I thought that finale sucked. I know the Sopranos finale. I know, Leon, we're not going to spoil it for you because you're watching the Sopranos right now.
Yeah,
but a lot of people didn't like the way the Sopranos finale ended. But to be to have some of the statements on social media that were last night about Game of Thrones was pretty eye-opening.
Well, I remember my parents being upset when they killed James on Good Times.
So I could go
way back then. I can remember how upset they were when they killed off James Evans on Good Times. But that's about it. That's the only thing I could probably think of that I've got emotionally tied to TV.
Well, upset. You're only in the third season of Breaking Bad.
So well, yeah.
When you get to the last season, number one, it ends perfectly, and it ends with a perfect finishing song.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, you'll be okay with the way that one wraps
up. We're good.
And it's so funny because whenever you see a good movie or whatever, you think to yourself that last scene, does it have enough to get you another movie, maybe.
Oh, okay. Now, I do remember when I was a kid, I watched Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
Yeah.
And when I found out that Darth Vader was Luke's father, I lost it.
Blew your mind.
Blew my mind. Now, that was mind-blowing as a kid watching that.
Mind-blowing as a kid. Joe will remember this. This was the original incarnation of XL Primetime. I was all excited going to movie theater to watch Independence Day 2. Independence Day was one of my favorite movies on the planet.
It was a great movie.
And
the first
20 years later, the aliens are coming back. Jeff Goldblum's back in it. Man, I was fired up. I go to the movie theater. That was the biggest pile of garbage that ever got made out of Hollywood. It was 2.5 hours that I will not get back. Literally the worst movie I've ever seen.
Most part twos never really deliver. They don't. Rocky had a nice run. There were a few other ones that had a nice run. Yeah. I even remember Pirates of the Caribbean whenever was the little monkey or whatever, he goes and gets that coin. I'm thinking, all right, there it is. There's another movie.
What about Godfather 2?
That was way better.
The best.
Okay, Godfather 2.
And Empire Strikes Back is better than the first
Terminator
one.
2 was better than Terminator.
Agreed. That's another one.
Let me just tell you
but
this.
There aren't enough of them.
Exactly. There's so many bad ones.
Yeah.
I saw Wick 3.
Over the weekend.
Not only is it the best Wick, There will be a four.
Yeah. And so that's what you're looking for.
There will be a four.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
And that's hard for me to believe because I watched week one, and then I watched week two over the weekend because I didn't want to watch week three.
So you can go.
And week two was so much better than week one, so he's telling me now week three is the best ever.
Not even close.
It's going to be hard to beat two.
I'm
going to be very judgmental.
You're going to be mad because at the end of the movie, you're going to go, I got to wait another year till I see four.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, the beautiful thing about it is that it's so hard to keep that franchise going. And as long as they could be creative and come up with something that you're not expecting, the Bourne series was really good. You can come up with a bunch of them.
American Pie, man. But, all of those movies were awesome.
There was nothing bad about that.
Love American Pie.
That was good.
There was nothing
bad. 1, 2, 3, American Wedding and American Reunion were all good.
Yeah, and as long as you had those characters, I was totally cool with
absolutely.
It. They were hilarious.
Stifler.
Yeah, the guy was just an absolute nut machine. That's for sure.
That's one way of putting it.
In honor of what is being put out there, I don't ever want to use social media as the Bible of the true opinion of fans out there. We would be really wrong.
You
to
had
do
people
that.
Though, Joe, with 300,000-400,000 followers.
I
guess these are important people in the world. I'd never heard of them. But they were just bashing HBO, saying the writers ran out of ideas, and this is the garbage they gave us last night. I wish I could have watched it so I knew what they were talking about.
There were
that many upset people about
it. All right, so the sorriest end to a series that you can think of will be a text line topic today. Have a little fun with that. Hit the text line, driven by Duval Ford, at 641-1010. The sorriest end to a series that you've ever watched. And this is
Lost.
TV. This is
Lost
TV.
Was bad.
Yeah.
Lost was
so
bad.
So start thinking about that. Have a little fun with it. But back to the PGA Championship. I know for a lot of us, it's so funny how we look at winners. When someone dominates, half of the audience can be blown away by just how great that one individual was. And then the other ones, if they're not – I don't know what it is. If they're not motivated by one versus the other guy, if it's a runaway win, they get bored. I don't know how you're ever going to completely satisfy fans. Because you went from Augusta when Tiger won, and it was this thrilling major championship conclusion on Sunday, to this where he was up by 7 shots, Brooks Koepka. But in the end, like I was hoping for, fellas, you'd get a little stumble on the back nine, and all of a sudden there was at least a little drama, a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think fans understand when a guy starts to implode. Like I've been in a situation where I've had started off with a bad game.
Yeah.
And then somehow you have to gather yourself to make sure that you come back. So I watched the PGA Championship. You're up by 7 shots. And then all of a sudden things just don't start working for you. And then somehow you got to pull it together and finish the deal.
Yeah.
And I don't think fans really can appreciate how hard that is when things are going wrong. It seems like this tumble effect, things just go. And then somehow you got to pull it together. I've been in situations like that when I play, like where I'm just having a god awful game, and all of a sudden you say, "Sir, we got to pull this thing together. You got to win."
Think about this, because it's like you play the same position, basically same set of plays, and the conditions are basically the same. In this particular thing, he's got all these other guys competing against him to shoot a better score. Wind is up 30, whipping at 25 to 30 miles per hour at times. So all of a sudden these conditions change, the golf course changes, and he was sideways. He really was.
Yeah.
It was very hard for him to adjust. There's no doubt about it. I mean, there's a reason you go 4 bogeys in a row. But it was almost like he was trying too much. He was trying to over-adjust, you know what I mean?
And I've never seen him panic.
Yeah, never, never. No. To me, I was like, wait a second. This is something where you could actually say the weather is an issue. The weather is a reason this is happening.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And how often do you say that in any sport, right?
Well, and the thing for Koepka, too, and Joe, I think I heard this right. Correct me if I'm wrong. No one had ever blown a 7-shot or more lead after 54 holes of a major.
We're talking
about the history of golf.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a long time. Koepka, when it got down to 1, Koepka was going to be famous if he blew that for all the wrong reasons. That was going to be John Vandeveld. That was going to be Greg Norman. Maybe even ratchet it up a little bit, but he turned it on right in the nick of time. Now, I would have loved to have seen what would have happened if Dustin Johnson didn't go bogey-bogey on 16 and 17.
Yeah, that one shot at 16 was the end.
That was the end. Really,
by the way, Joe, you're the golf guy. What did you think of the fans chanting DJ?
Listen, hopefully you will have the cut as we go along today, but that question was asked of Brooks Koepka. And for those who didn't see the whole broadcast, might have missed this. He's leaking oil big time. He has bogeyed 3 holes in a row, okay? 11, 12, 13. After a birdie at 10 put him back up. by, I think it was 5 at that point. Anyway, he goes bogey, bogey, bogey. Then he gets to 14, and you're thinking, all right, this is a somewhat of a benign hole. Pins cut to the front, hit it to the back, let it wash down, you'll be good to go. He blows it over the green, and just as Frank Nobilo's making the call, he goes, we haven't seen any – and then it goes over the back of the green. And he was basically saying we haven't seen anybody do that all week long. So then not only does he do that, he pitches it over and through the green when Peter Costas is calling it, saying, look, all he needs to do is get it up on the green and just let it feed towards the hole. He bogeys the hole. They start chanting DJ. When he's walking across that green, I'm telling you, his eyes, his language from the body was basically saying this to the fans.
Right.
And it was the salute to the fans. That's what he was doing.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Let me tell the intern, just don't record
it. Yeah, right. We're being filmed now and you're shooting us the bird. I don't know if that's the right time to be doing that.
That's what he was saying, though.
Yeah.
Guarantee you.
Let me ask you a question. When a player like that is going through that, and he's leaking oil, as you say, how much does the caddy pay in and just calming them down?
Complete and total you have to have that.
Yeah.
Complete and total partner in that situation. Ricky Elliott's an older guy, an Irishman, calm. He goes, and he said afterwards, he goes, I've never seen Brooks get nervous on the golf course, and he was nervous. Mm-hmm. And he basically was the calming influence. You have to have that because you have to somehow, some way get someone to kind of clear your mind and reset. And that's basically what he was able to do.
This may be an ESPN stats and info, or in our case, a JJ question.
JJ stats and info.
JJ stats and info. How many golfers have won 4 majors in a 2-year window? Because, well, Koepka won his 4th major inside of 24 months yesterday.
In 23 months.
23 months. And, I mean, Tiger obviously did it.
Yeah.
You would think at some point Jack did it.
Well, Tiger did it in the span of not a calendar year, but basically a 12-month, less than 12-month span, because he was holding all 4 trophies at once. And, by the way, he was holding the Players' Crystal at the same time. So think about that. 5 trophies from 2000 to 2001 that he was holding, which is really just something else. But there are very few people that have been able to do this in terms of win 4 over a span of a couple of years. And we're talking rare air. I think it's Lee Trevino, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger.
Tiger won
Phil.
7 out of 11.
Yeah, and Tiger did it twice, by the way.
Which is
and by the way, Koepka.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, Tiger did it twice.
And Koepka was darn near right there at the Masters, too.
I mean,
he gave Tiger everything he wanted at Augusta last month.
If he didn't blow, what hole was that, 14? Did he blow there?
That sounds right, because I can't remember exactly what he did on the par 5s, but that does sound right. The 14 may have been the one that got him. But, heck, yeah, you're talking about a guy. I wanted to see his heart race. And Nick Faldo said it perfectly. He said his face just filled up. It's red.
Right.
And he was panicking. And Koepka said after the tournament, I'm glad we didn't have to play any more golf. This was the worst he's ever felt on a golf course. It wasn't fun. It was about an hour of, you know, like, can I actually pull this off? He said he didn't remember ever having 4 bogeys in a row. So all this was just happening at the same time. And he was paying attention to the scoreboard, which is smart. And DJ had a chance, had a great chance, and that one swing ended up doing it. That was the end for him.
I'm happy we got some drama. I mean, you think 7 shots going in, this is going to be ho-hum, you know, the coronation, if you will. But no, it was fun to watch there. And like I said, you just wish for – I didn't have a dog in the race. I don't care who wins between Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson. That's why when the bogeys happened on 16 and 17 – that was the only thing I didn't like, because I would have liked to see what Koepka would have had to do, knowing he had to finish, you know, par, 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 or whatever down the stretch. When you're up 3 with two holes to go, it was pretty self-explanatory at that point.
I had matchsticks on it, so I had picked DJ.
I bet you were more upset than I was.
Yeah, I was dead serious about that one.
So do you want to hear his response to the fans?
Yes, yeah, let me hear that, because I was up at the sports lounge just going nuts when DJ hit that one putt. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, we got something here, but Brooks was able to hold him off.
Like I said, I think it actually helped. It was at a perfect time, because I was just thinking, okay, all right, I got everybody against me, let's go.
And you know the other great thing he said about it, and there was 1,000 questions that were kind of devoted to that one subject from the media, and one of them was, what did you think about the New York fans? Did you feel like you were a Boston Red Sox baseball player coming into New York? He goes, look, I don't blame them. I deserved it. I was choking it away. And I think that's basically the way he had to look at it. So he endeared himself to the New York fans, and you know how they are. They're all over you. And they were chanting DJ, DJ. And he didn't fold up his tent. He definitely
that
held on.
Just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC.
More PGA Championship talk, certainly with Brooks Koepka winning his fourth major in the last 23 months. But Jaguars begin OTAs tomorrow, at least the on-the-field portion of OTAs. Other NFL teams getting underway today. Bad news, apparently, coming out of Washington Redskins OTA practice. Reuben Foster, who was in San Francisco, had some legal issues in San Francisco. The Redskins took a chance on him, picked him up off of waivers. By all indications, he was going to be the starting linebacker right there in the middle of the Redskins defense. Carted off the field less than an hour ago. His knee in a cast, reportedly in tears, going out of Redskins Park. So OTAs are fun, but when you hear stories like this, potentially the former Alabama linebacker, you don't want to speculate, but your knee in a cast, Leon, getting carted off the field, that's not a good thing.
And you know it. When you have an injury like that, you know it. Like when I blew out my quadricep tendon, I knew I was done for the season. Now, I don't know how severe this injury is.
Within 10 seconds.
Yeah, but you know, when everything, your muscle pulls up and it's the pain, I can't even explain.
People talk about
excruciating
the pain
is.
Do you hear the pop?
Like, you hear it. It's like a shotgun. It's like someone just shot. It's like somebody just shot a pistol right at your ear because you hear pow. And all of a sudden your muscles roll up and the pain is so, ugh.
What's worse, not playing or the rehab?
Not playing. I mean, I could deal with the rehab. I mean, all the stuff that goes into, all you're doing, ice and stem, stretch, all the kind of stuff. Once you repair, it's boring, it's teetering. Yeah. You got to do it every day or whatever. But when you see your guys going out there playing and practicing.
So it's like the
that,
mental.
Yeah, it's just mentally.
Yeah,
it's
just which mentally getting better. Mentally just beat you to death that you're not out there. Whereas physically, you know you got to kind of get out there and do the rehab.
Yeah. You've never had like a knee, like an ACL or anything, right?
No, I've never had that.
So you've never actually had like actual surgery where they had to go in and
No. With the surgery with my knee, they had to repair. They had to repair the tendon. The tendon had torn.
So they had to attach it.
Yeah, they had to reattach it.
So that wasn't a pain?
Oh, yeah, it was a pain. Yeah, it was surely a pain. Right after surgery, a pain.
And we seem to see one of these every year. It was about a year ago this time that Hunter Henry, the tight end with the Chargers, he blew out his knee in OTAs for Charger, OTA practice, and now Reuben Foster this year. And again, we're all looking forward to getting out of the Jags this week. They're on the field beginning tomorrow. You just hope that injury bug that was so prevalent here last year does not revisit itself.
Yeah,
this year.
You can't safeguard against injuries. It's just a part of the game. I mean, you say you want you take away practices, and you can't safeguard these players. You've got to get them out there and play. If you think about the fact that you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah,
you know. So these guys have just got to go on and say, "Hey, look, whatever happens, happens." But I got to play football.
But are you going 100% in OTAs?
Yeah. Well, I did.
Right.
Yeah, I did. I'm sure a lot of the rookies. The rookies who aren't the draft picks. Free agent guys, they're going hard because they're trying to make an impression.
Right.
The veterans will be like, "Hey, man, chill," but you can't chill because you're trying to make a team. So it's going to be very interesting to see the dynamics.
So some vets pull back, though.
Well, yeah, some vets. You know, if you've been in there long enough, you know what to do and what not to do. And some vets can just chill and coach because they don't want to get hurt before the season. But then you're going to have rookies there, undrafted rookies who are coming in there trying to make an impression, going hard, going full speed, which is going to piss off some of the vets.
Which is forcing the vets to go a little harder.
Yeah, of course.
It's your 100% in helmets and shorts, and their 100%, they think, hey, I got to make every single play someone wants to mark down that I'm going to make this team. And that's how they look at it. And you got to at least get in their ear a little bit and say, back it down.
Well, we had a saying for rookies. We was like, look, don't go out here and be a hero. Okay, you're not going to make the squad in May. That's a lot of veterans would say, because a lot of veterans want to save themselves, you know, for training camp.
So selfishly, you had them not try as hard.
I heard them say it.
See, but where we are, where the media is in the Jaguar, on the Jaguar practice field, the offensive linemen, the big uglies, are always right there with us. You always take a good look at the offensive line. And every OTA, particularly since Coughlin got here, this will be the third one, they're working really hard, obviously, but there's no pads on. Right, the receivers, the DBs, they can go out there and compete. The quarterbacks are getting their timing. The running backs can go through drills. But you guys, the big uglies along the offensive line, or the big sexies, however you want to describe yourself.
I prefer big sexy.
They look miserable out there because you can't hit anybody. You can't really do anything. You're just going through drills.
Well, listen, you got to take advantage of any opportunity you have to work on your craft. I tell guys that all the time. And if you don't have pads on, then what you should be focusing on is your stance, your balance, your attack points. You know, pushing off your inside foot, your lead foot, your side, all that kind of stuff. You got to mentally prepare yourself for that stuff now. So as an offensive lineman, you want to work hand placement. You want to work leverage, knee bend, hands inside, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, there's always something that you can do. You know, it gets tedious and boring after a while because you really, as offensive lineman, you want to get after somebody. But right now I tell guys, especially when I used to coach at college, all this is technique and fundamentals. You know, so you get all the technical stuff down now. So when you get the pads on, it's just automatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way I would think technique is what most veterans are focused on. They're not focused on speed. They're not focused on finishing necessarily. It's just knowing exactly what you're going to do, and technique would be the most important thing. All right, a few things off the text line driven by Duval Ford. You can hit us up at 641-1010. You can also go social media and get in touch with any of us at 1010XL Joe C, at Ryan Green 1010XL, at Searcy underscore Leon, at Matt Hayes CFB, and of course over there at JJ LaSelva, making sure that everything sounds great. Seinfeld finale sucked. As well.
Terrible.
Last
yeah, it was
night,
not good. Was
terrible.
Not good.
Never seen it.
Dexter by a Mile was listed as one of the ones that was, I'm guessing most, had a sorry ending.
What was Dexter about? That was like
he's a murderer.
A murderer.
But he murdered bad people, so he was like a good guy.
Yeah, I've been told many times I would like that, but I've never watched it.
Yeah, and it definitely is one to get into. That's for sure.
I'll tell you, the one that always sticks with me is How I Met Your Mother. Mm-hmm. I invested 8-9 years of my life with How I Met Your Mother. That finale was terrible.
It's like
the writers just ran out of ideas.
I think they do.
And they just threw this slop together, and they said, there's the finale.
I felt sorry for them when it came to the Seinfeld one, because the episode, which was like a two-parter, they end up in jail. It did kind of suck, but that wasn't a show where there was like a story to end. They could have ended it any way at all. And
it was hokey
fine.
That they brought back all
everybody.
These little bit characters. It was hokey, but I still didn't mind
it. And I'll still watch the episode and laugh every time it comes on.
I wanted to see, who was the Pakistani guy who just looked at Jerry and says, you're a good man, Jerry. You're a good man.
Open up his
and then he just hated Jerry after that when he got deported, which I guess I could understand that. But then there were so many other characters. I was cool with it. I was all right with it.
Are there any finales that were awesome? I guess MASH is always
Breaking
the one
Bad.
People go to.
Breaking Bad was perfect.
Yeah, Breaking Bad was perfect. Chilling. Chilling. And you did, and you weren't quite sure there was going to be anything that could come after that. And one little piece at least left the possibility that something else could
plus that
could
little
come after
that. Bad finger tune that just finished it right off, man. Yeah. Baby Blue just finished it. Perfect.
See, now y'all going to make me watch the whole thing tonight.
You're going to binge.
I'm going to binge.
You got to do what you got to do, man.
You're season two. Are you into season three yet?
I'm going into season three.
Okay. All right. Let's get into it a little bit as far as some of the others that you thought were lousy endings to good shows, whatever it might be. Thanks to Monroe Smokehouse Barbecue, one of our sponsors today. You will not have a bad meal there. It's always delicious, served up high, a big pile of barbecue, great size, delicious desserts, whatever you want. You're craving barbecue, make sure you make it Monroe's on Highway Avenue near Cassett and on beach between Southside and St. John's Bluff. We haven't mentioned the Preakness, but we did know that one horse said, you know what? Get off of me. And he tossed his jockey, so we'll get into that coming up on XL Primetime.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
Now, what up to it, man? We're not giving away the ending. But that's the song.
That's the song to Breaking Bad.
The last song here. Right, as it ends, this is what comes on.
Oh, okay.
Guess I got what I deserve. Mm. And it had multiple meanings, okay? Because it wasn't just, that wasn't what I deserve for one individual.
Right.
That was for many,
many, many, many individuals.
Yeah. I feel like I've missed out a lot on life. Yeah. Seinfeld, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones. I haven't seen any of them.
Godfather. Music.
Godfather.
You haven't seen Godfather?
No, I haven't seen any of these things.
Bro, we've already gone over this.
At least you watch one movie 7,000 times.
No, but
you haven't missed out too much.
You do have Judge Judy, though.
Yeah. I do have Judge Judy. But no, I mean, I hear Breaking Bad. My wife loves Breaking Bad. It was starting to come to a conclusion right when I met Heidi, and every week, whenever it came on, was it Wednesday, Thursday night, whatever it was, that was appointment viewing for her. And now it's Better Call Saul. Is that it? Better
Call
Saul?
Yeah, yeah.
She's all into Better Call Saul. Which and I guess they're making a Breaking Bad movie.
But Better Call Saul is like much slower, and it's really a development piece, which is cool. Because
it's more cerebral.
It takes a long time to see the character unfold. He tries so hard not to become that character. And so it really – it's a slow watch, but I love it. And there's so many other pieces to it that have nothing to do with Breaking Bad, but it's still
August,
fascinating.
Right? Season 4, August.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you say now?
August.
When?
Season 4.
Yep. Season 4. Yep. Okay. Because I was telling TLD, I said, Matt Hayes said something about the new season is live, and I didn't think it was live.
It was preview clips on AMC.
Okay, that's what it is.
But
okay.
I was panicking too, believe me.
All right, so.
The only show I'm invested in currently is Cobra Kai. We just watched season 2, Leon. That was big
but
for
me. But
at
least, you are watching like kind of a
Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai is really good. Yeah. It's all like, the Karate Kid.
Cobra Kai.
Yeah, it's all the actors that were in the original Karate Kid Mr. Miyagi, obviously. Okay. It just passed 30 million views on YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah, well, Mr. Miyagi's been dead for quite some time.
But still, rest in peace. Yeah.
Mr. Miyagi? Yeah, he died like 14 years ago.
Wow, I didn't know that. I'm heartbroken. I used to like it.
Wax off.
He's a good guy. I actually knew him.
Danielson.
I met him personally a couple of times when I worked at Nickelodeon. He was down there filming The Mystery Files of Shelby Woo, Pat Morita, and I ran into him a couple of times. Actually, I had lunch with him in the cafeteria one day. That was quite a sight.
What was he eating?
I don't even remember. But seeing Mr. Miyagi in the Nickelodeon cafeteria, that's just not something you expect to see when you walk in there. I think I was like 16 at the time.
Did you ask him about Happy Days or no?
No, that was a little before my time.
He was Arnold for Happy
Days. He was so cool. Yeah. He was making it happen up there in the land of Milwaukee. Chips swarming 95 and JTB. To 295, that according to the 333.
Yes, they are. There was a big Jeep over on the side of the road there.
And then another one
slowed down drastically on my way in.
Another one on US 1 at 95. Chips, I'm guessing motorcycle cops he's talking about.
No, there was a big there was a big Jeep police officer vehicle.
Really
was...
crappy ending to Chips, by the way.
You know what? Chips had the longest opening in the history
right.
of television.
I actually have no idea how it ended.
I was just going to say,
the open lasted 12 minutes. You only needed to cover like another 20 after that.
Right.
But Lost is getting a lot of votes as far as the sorriest end to a long-running television series. So you can jump in on that. Now, this was not long-running at all. Deontay Wilder, in a title match, knocked the dude out in 49 seconds. And really, the first 40 seconds of that was just a little bit of dancing after the introduction. And then it was about 2 or 3 seconds when he landed the blow, and then about 5 or 6 more seconds for this guy to completely hit the canvas and pass out. Deontay Wilder delivering a – well, yeah, he even used the word kill. This is a sport you can die in, a kill shot. That's what he did.
I almost wish – or maybe I'll become a more of a boxing fan. I gave up on it. Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, Riddick Bowe, Andrew Gallant. I used to really be into it, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the heavyweight division. But then when the Klitschko brothers came in, I just kind of went away from it.
They're boring.
Yeah, and this guy, Wilder, and I'll be honest with you, I maybe heard him his name vaguely referenced a couple times. I have no idea who he is, Leon. Mm-hmm. I'm watching this on Saturday night. It was on YouTube, and I saw it on Twitter. He knocked the hell out of this guy. One of the hardest shots you'll ever see. This dude went down like a ton of bricks 40 seconds into the fight. If boxing turns back into that... it would be fantastic. That was back in the Mike Tyson days, the Riddick Bowe days. I gave Pacquiao and Mayweather a shot, but to me that was boring a couple of years ago.
It was
12 rounds of nothing, of dancing around.
He hit him so hard, like you could see his brain move in his head. I'm telling you right now, man, if
CTE.
I can guarantee you that a lot of people saw that and said, you got to outlaw that sport, man.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee people said that.
Things are rattling around because the contact was so fierce and so
vicious.
Forceful. But the thing is like, what would you rather have? A couple of guys dancing around. I'm not disagreeing with Pacquiao Mayweather because that's basically what it was. Just, you know, kind of bumping into each other, pushing off of each other. Or the one shot that's over with. You spend all your money for a night, and it's done in less than a minute.
I thought Mayweather.
Look, guys have experienced that before. But I'm talking about a boxing match. A boxing match here that lasted 50 seconds.
Mayweather-McGregor did something for me. That was fun. Because you had some dancing around. Conor McGregor, not a real boxer, but there were some shots being thrown in that one as well. That might be the best boxing match I've seen in quite some time. Yeah, no, I thought it was good. I thought it was good. Because I don't want to see the tacticians and the boxing technicians and all that. I want to see guys – getting the hell knocked out.
He doesn't want to see boxing,
right?
Yeah, that's what happened on Saturday. I want to see guys just get pummeled.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was just that's what I was just thinking. The Hagler Hearns, that got to be the best three rounds of boxing ever. Have you ever watched it?
The Hagler Hearns, I believe. Yeah.
Oh man, they're just pummeling each other.
I thought he was a big boxing fan. Fat Tony on Jaguars Today. And one day a couple years ago, we went on YouTube and just watched all these boxing matches. And it was a lot of fun to do, and he can break it down. With the best
I guarantee
one.
He loves Hagler Hearns. Yeah, that was just. But first off, they hated each other. That's number
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely, that's what.
And then once they got in that ring, that was a long anticipated fight. They get in that ring, and woo boy,
they were actually fighting like they slept with each other's ladies. That's how they were. It was a distaste for each other.
Wow, that's really
how bad it was.
And they brought that energy, and I don't know whether it's money related or not. What is up for grabs now versus then? I'm not sure. But they fought like that was their last fight. Like you said, they have to go back. They're either going to rule the village or they're going to go into a jail cell, and that's kind of what it looked like. Because they fought with that much fury. And who knows whether the money definitely has had an impact on these guys. But those were some good, good matches back in the day.
Now, you guys tell me. Maybe it's very similar to a sport I love. I've made the argument that men's tennis is just floundering because there's not an American worth watching right now. And the Americans don't do very well like they did with Sampras and Agassi and McEnroe and Connors. Is heavyweight boxing the same thing? With more Tyson, no more Riddick Bowe, no more Evander Holyfield, no more George Foreman. Did it just go away because there wasn't an American worth watching?
It really hasn't done anything for me. I think in like the 80s and 90s, even early 2000s, you had the personality at the heavyweight position where you made you want to watch. You know, the Tyson, I mean, just the sheer.
The Klitschko's killed it.
Yeah, exactly.
They had a reign on the heavyweight division for 15 years. They didn't speak much English. They're very boring fighters, very technical, to where like casuals like Hack will not have fun watching them. And finally, one of them got knocked out by Anthony Joshua a couple years ago, and that's when the heavyweight division became like really fun again.
Yeah, I kind of fell off with watching heavyweight fighting after Lennox Lewis. I just fell off.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, there just weren't enough stylish candidates that could wear the belt that you would kind of really dig and get into.
Or Americans.
And then, yeah, and Americans definitely a big part of this. And then the other part of it is you went WBA, WBC,
IBF, and then, WBO.
Yeah. And so next thing you knew, a lot like when the wrestling world started to fragment and fracture and break away, that's exactly what was happening. So then you had Bob Arum, Don King, all these guys coming in and trying to put together these fight cards, and you could win a title, but you didn't win
you the weren't
unified.
The guy.
You know, and so it really did mess it up. And then obviously most people think pay-per-view had a huge impact on it because if you weren't buying the fight, you weren't seeing it. And we're going back in time now. Now people just accept pay-per-view. But that also but the boxers themselves, they made plenty of money off of that. So they were never going
to
turn.
You know, it's interesting, and to Hacker's point about tennis, I truly believe any sport, like if it starts to have a lull, it's because there's no villain. You got to have a villain.
Bad guy.
You got to have a villain that everybody can rally around and say, you got to beat this guy.
That's true.
And that's in any sport. And I think that's why tennis is lost, because there's no personality there. There's no villain.
Well, there's not a McEnroe.
There's not
out
a McEnroe.
There.
There's not a Connors. There's not a bad
Agassi.
Boy. Yeah. And
but
that's a problem.
Djokovic and those guys are fun to watch.
Yeah, he's likable.
Yeah, they're likable.
But they're not American tennis
and
players.
And like Nadal has zero personality. And then you have – and the only one – not the only, but the place he wins most is on clay. And then the guy that was right there with him, Federer, could never win on clay.
Right.
And so you just kind of went back and forth. This guy was the master of grass. This guy was the master of clay. And it, I don't know. It just didn't have it. And none of them were American, like we said. So that was long gone. Boy, that ship has sailed a long time ago.
I remember I got the Mike Tyson-Peter McNeely fight. Or I didn't get it. My brother got it. I was kind of young at the time. But it was Tyson's return fight. Mm-hmm. Coming out of jail or out of prison. And Peter McNeely, remember seeing the movie The Great White Hype?
He's just a
with
bum.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Of course.
And that was Peter McNeely was built up to be the guy that was going to bring back Mike Tyson and knock him out and welcome back to boxing. And Tyson beat the hell out of that guy in about 89 seconds. And everybody paid like $74 on pay-per-view to see Tyson obliterate Peter McNeely. And that's to Joe's point, was kind of the problem. Is you have fights like that, people would waste all their money and nothing would happen. But right. I'd rather see a guy just get knocked out than have dancing around in the ring for 12 rounds.
Okay, but you can go back, and this is, again, when pay-per-view was probably a little pricier than it is now, because they were just, whatever, infancy stages, so they were charging a little bit more money. But you can go to when Michael Spinks had a chance to win a heavyweight belt, and he was knocked out in 91 seconds.
Yeah, in 91 seconds. I was going to say 30.
And it felt like 30. And again, I go back to the, you know, less than 2 minutes. People are familiar with this. 91 seconds, and you felt like you had been ripped off.
Yeah, Rob.
Your ice hadn't been melted yet in that little glass of bourbon before he was knocked out. And so you're planning for a big night. You've got steaks. You've got, you know, everything. And then, boom, over, just like that.
To be fair, this last weekend wasn't a pay-per-view fight.
No, it was just
Showtime. Right. But I get your point.
Right. Yeah. But also with Tyson, he was a villain and he was a champion.
Yeah.
So you wanted to watch him because you couldn't wait to see him kill someone.
Yeah.
But he was also the villain. And I think that's why it hit its peak there with him. Ooh,
Mayweather, yeah, too. People just watched Mayweather to see him lose.
And boxing had some really interesting things happen. You had Parachute Man, right, that flew into the ring. And what was that?
Fan Man.
Or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
The guy that came in on the parachute. And then Golota and Riddick Bowe at the Garden, where you had a full-flow riot go on HBO. Leon, they're live on HBO Sports. Jim Lampley and George Foreman are calling this thing. Golota went low on Riddick Bowe not once, not twice, but three times.
I remember that.
When I mean he went low, I mean he hit him in the regions.
Yeah, it was.
He went low. Referee stopped it, disqualified Golota. Bowe's camp had enough. They stormed the ring, and there is just a brawl
mayhem.
Inside
Madison
Square
Garden.
So camp v camp?
Pretty much.
Yeah, they rushed each other.
HBO Sports doesn't go fade to dark.
No,
they're zooming in on it. And they're showing this live riot live on HBO.
I'm on YouTube right now. You kidding me?
That was genius. What, you thought they shouldn't have?
I think
that was genius.
Who was the trainer for Golota? The older guy?
Was it Dundee was the trainer?
No, I'll know his name in a second. But one of the more famous trainers. Yeah. He's getting beat over the head with like a cell phone or something. And HBO is just showing this.
Teddy
Atlas.
Teddy Atlas.
No, it wasn't Atlas. Anyway,
speaking of HBO, Harold Letterman died this week, which was like, he's massive. Yeah, name in boxing.
Yeah.
He was the guy that was always do the scorecard. Hey!
Again, rest in peace. That is shocking news. But going back to that Golota fight, it's just like the Malice in the Palace. Why would you not stay live on that stuff? Those directors, those camera guys, they are going nuts for something like that. Crazy, unpredictable, but I still think you got to roll the tape.
George Foreman was stopping people getting into the ring.
Yeah.
He's live on TV saying, don't go in there, young man. Don't go in there.
Yeah.
You'll just get arrested, young man. Don't ruin your life.
Yeah, well, he was just trying to, because it was mayhem, that's for sure. Over the weekend, I get fired up for horse racing. You guys know that.
Lou Duva, by the way.
Yeah,
Lou
Golota's
trainer.
Duva had been around for a long time. So the PGA Championship hits the final shot Saturday afternoon, and the Preakness smartly waiting for that PGA Championship third round to go final so they could go ahead and put all the thoroughbreds in post and then go ahead and turn them loose as they had a mile and 3/16 around Pimlico for the Preakness. No sooner did they lift the gate as Bodie Express just basically dumped his jockey, just said, get off me. And that jockey, no sooner did he come out of that rail right there. I'm showing this to Leon so he can get a kick.
Well, did you see what actually caused it? Was the handler still had his arm and hand on the horse.
So
it was his fault. And so that I guess they refunded. If you bet on that horse, you got your money back because it was that guy's fault.
Yeah, and so do they penalize that guy?
Does he get fired?
I don't know exactly how that works, but the classic part of it was that Bodie Express just kept running. He never stopped. And he was on the outside just trailing the big pack of horses by himself. Had nobody on Bodie Express guiding him around the racetrack. He stuck with him for a while. And then once the race was over with, he kept just kind of circling the track.
I like that in the horse.
And so, like we said, there were only four from the Derby that made it into the Preakness. So it was a totally different set of names. But you saw some of those that we expected to be at the top, including War of Will. But it didn't have near the drama. But now, in two races in the Triple Crown, we will remember a disqualification and a jockeyless horse.
And a race not starting till 7 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of got off to a late start on Saturday.
Well, like I said, they waited for that last putt to drop for the PGA.
Yeah.
And it normally starts after 6:30, so we're only talking about another 15 minutes, 20 minutes max is but basically it, what it boiled down
to. You know, I know they're a diehard in horse racing people, and but it goes to show you what happens when the Derby winner is not in the Preakness, and we talked about this on Friday. The fact that the Derby winner was not in, I be honest with you, I forgot the Preakness was on. I watched the highlights afterwards. I mean, I'm doing stuff. I'm watching the PGA, getting ready for Golden State Portland, taking care of the little man. I look up at 7:30, and I flip it over on NBC, and I see the post race. I'm like, oh, crap. So then I go online and actually watch the race. But if the Derby winner would have been in it, it would have been appointment viewing. It's just unfortunate that the guy, the horse that wins the Derby with all that scrutiny or whatnot because of the disqualification, they decided not to enter the Preakness. And certainly for guys like me, it affected the way I thought about the Preakness.
Who's the horse that won the Derby again?
Country House?
Come on, JJ.
Oh, I thought you were legitimately asking.
No, but that's the Hack's point.
Country House. No one remembers.
Yeah,
and I totally get what you guys are saying, but I just think there was about a 50% chance you would have watched it anyway.
No, that's not true. That's not true.
That's just what I believe.
No, okay.
Because I'm serious.
I believe just, in Santa Claus.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can believe in all sorts of things.
Yeah, if you go to Disney enough, I do think you believe in Santa Claus. So, yeah.
Shots fired.
No, but whatever the horse that – now, granted, if the horse that wins the Derby didn't win the Preakness, I probably wouldn't watch the Belmont.
Yeah.
But I watch till the Triple Crown's out of reach.
I do get it.
I mean, for the casual watcher, I mean, if the guy's going for the Triple Crown, then it becomes is that the major?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really the distinction
when's the last
that you won
crown
last year.
Last year, yeah, two within the last
five years.
I could see you were enthralled by last year, Leon.
Yeah,
I missed it.
Justified,
and it's so funny, but
I missed it, bro.
37 years until we got American Pharoah, and then just a couple of years later, Justify was able to do it as well. And everyone's talking about, you know, is it going to save racing? No. It's just three races a year that everybody pays attention to. End of story. And the third one only if there's a chance for maybe something special.
Okay, so who's like the most famous Triple Crown?
Secretariat.
I was thinking that. Yeah. Okay, that's
– and that's
when they make a Hollywood flick out of you and they with Tobey Maguire stars in it?
That was Seabiscuit.
Seabiscuit. Yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, he's famous too.
Yeah.
But Secretariat won by 40 – was it 40 –
lengths?
Oh, yeah, just ran
lengths.
Away with it. Yeah.
You're killing it right now.
Just absolutely.
Well, JJ, you're I'm relying on you, brother. I'm going to hand off the reins to you and you can –
Reins, there you go.
Yeah, there's a horse racing term. Now, let's get back into the Jags because we have OTAs – starting tomorrow, and we'll be able to take a look at what they look like. Again, shorts and helmets, but we already reported that one guy for the Washington Redskins, Reuben Foster, carted off the field with what looks like a leg injury just with shorts and helmets on.
Knee and a cast, reportedly in tears.
Yeah, no good at all when you're talking about a guy that wants to be able to get out there and kind of reclaim his reputation because he's been in and out of legal controversy. I don't believe he ever had any charges pressed against him, but he and the girlfriend at the time, there was some craziness going on, and who knows whose fault it was, but never any official charges pressed against him, nor did he have to serve any time. But there's a guy that's out there trying to reclaim his reputation. Boom, he gets hurt. You know it's going to cross every player's mind when you get hurt in May instead of during the football season. Why are we out here?
Yeah, but you got to practice.
Yep.
You got to practice. You've got to work on your craft. You got to work on your technique, your fundamental. You got to get out on the field. And with OTAs, what it's going to be is it's going to be the first sign of it's going to be the first thing in installment. Everything is going to be installment with the offense, installment with the defense. So you're going to make sure all the right guys are in the right position. You know, you want to make sure the rookies understand the different formations and the different coverages and all that stuff. So it's going to be various. You need this stuff for the rookies, to be quite honest with you. I mean, veterans are like, you know, I really don't need this. But as far as rookies go, getting the playbook, understanding the different formations, coverage, and just being in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be very –
we're talking about three or four guys that could be starters.
Exactly.
How demoralizing is that for a team, Leon, to lose a guy that's a projected starting linebacker and it doesn't look good here in the month of May?
You get upset, especially when the guy has the potential of being a starter. And a guy like Reuben Foster, who's had his legal issues or whatever, sometimes just a change of venue – just from going from one city to another city, you need that. And then he comes to Washington with great expectations and then goes out on OTAs and tears up his knee. It's just very unfortunate, but that's just the nature of the beast. That's just the game of football. Your guys get injured. Guys get injured in weight rooms. Guys get injured running conditioning. Guys get, so, I mean, you understand what you're signing up for when you come out there. So it's just unfortunate that he had to do it so early. And I can tell you, when you get hurt early, the process of going through, watching, and can't compete, it is the worst thing ever. It's the worst thing ever. Just going in, you feel so helpless because people are carting you around. You know, you got crutches and you're walking out there, guys are patting you on your back. It's going
to
be all right. I hated that.
Yeah. Well, not
don't
to bring
cobble
up,
me. I didn't like to be
Well, cobbled. Not to bring up bad memories, but none of us have been carted off the field. Mm-hmm. You were the first day of training camp. So if you're Reuben Foster today, you can put on a cart. You're going by your teammates. They're all looking at you. You go into the locker room. What are those first minutes and moments like after you get carted off the field knowing that you have a pretty significant injury? I mean, you lived that.
Yeah, I did. I lived it 3 years in a row. The last one, when I was with the Dolphins, when I tore my tricep, I kind of knew it was over. Mm-hmm. I was in the locker room crying, and I remember Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas coming up to me saying, "You're going to be all right, bro. You'll be all right. You'll be back." And I knew right then that I was going to be back.
You're done.
I was done. I mean, because when you're in the NFL and you get injured 3 years in a row, all of a sudden you become damaged goods. Because Leon can't stay healthy. And teams don't want to associate or deal with that kind of stuff. So I kind of knew this was my last hurrah. And it's a very demoralizing feeling to know that you can't play football anymore. Right. So I'm not saying Ruben's in that situation because he's relatively young. But it does sink in that, you know, man, I told him, I had such high aspirations for this season. All of a sudden, my knee blows out. So
it's like your professional mortality sets in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no longer are you going to be able to compete, have a check, all that stuff. All that, I'm sure, just takes over your thoughts right at that moment. That's for sure. It stinks. But we'll be out there tomorrow for OTAs. We'll at least get a look at some of these guys, what they look like. And like I said earlier, there's a chance that 3, 4, 5 guys will earn very important playing time when it's all said and done. We're talking Juwan Taylor easily plugged in as a starter. Josh Allen, you know, is going to be part of the – He might be an opening day starter. He might be in on the second play, whatever the case is. And then, as we said, we've gone over Josh Oliver, the tight end, so many of the other ones. So we can dig into all that coming up in the 1 o'clock hour.
What starting spots are on the line? Veterans will be out there as well. And obviously a lot of this will be figured out mini camp, training camp, and the preseason. But of the 22 starting spots, right tackle might be open, although we all think that's Juwan Taylor. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I guess you'd say it's open because he's going to go get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Linebacker's definitely open. You don't really know what's happening there with two of those positions. Yeah. Is safety open? Does anybody challenge Jared Wilson or Ronnie Harrison?
Nothing wrong with that.
So, I mean, I don't know how many spots are open of the starting 22, but there are a handful.
All right, so let's stay on that subject and get into that in the 1 o'clock hour because, A, could it be open? Could someone challenge him? But, B, is there a guy that can challenge him? So let's do all that coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. If you're a late lunch guy, you might want to drop on by Monroe's Smokehouse Barbecue all afternoon long into the evening. You can head there for dinner as well. Slow smoked process, all those recipes that they've really owned and you've enjoyed for a long time on Highway Avenue near Cassett on Beach between Southside and St. John's Bluff. Go check out Monroe's when you're craving some barbecue. So spots that are up for grabs for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who's going to take them? This is just the beginning with the OTAs.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
Into the 1 o'clock hour, it is XL Primetime. Thanks for hanging out with us. Leon Searcy until 1:30 today. Joe C., Ryan the Hacker Green, Matt Hayes, he of the Bleacher Report, and J.J. LaSelva. We've got interns everywhere. Dylan's in here doing stuff. What's our
JJ,
other new intern's
up,
name?
Man. Turn that up.
Shout it out.
Yeah, now we're
talking. Graham is also in here videoing, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. RJ is like intern promoted. Now doing the updates.
Yeah, I think he's like a real guy now.
Yeah, so we have him all over the place today having a good time. Let's get into the Jaguars and some of that position battle talk that you know it's going to live from now all the way into training camp, and it may not even be settled for the first month of the season. Who the heck knows how this thing will play out, but it's definitely something worth getting into that when we get out there and at least for the first time see these guys working. This is the right, we've already had a rookie mini camp. Coaches have already got a chance to see them. There's already on the field work going on where coaches are allowed out there. They can work with them certain periods, certain amount of time. They've been working with the playbook, all that stuff. Gardner Minshew says as soon as he was drafted, he said, send me the playbook. So he's soaking it up. So what are we going to see when we get out there tomorrow? We're going to see an opportunity for guys to win jobs. The tight end, the right tackle, the linebacking core, it's all out there.
Leon, you mentioned it in the last segment. I always like going out there and watching the rookies in their first day OTAs, because tomorrow A.J. Boye will be out there. Tomorrow Miles Jack will be out there. Tomorrow Calais Campbell will be out there. And when you see these rookies, they did rookie minicamp, but it gets real tomorrow. So as a veteran, when you came into your first day of on-the-field activity in the offseason, what are you kind of looking for out of the rookie class? Are you looking to say, all right, that guy's got a little moxie to him? He kind of sized these guys up a little bit?
What I'm really looking for as far as a rookie goes is just how much information can he decipher from the meetings to the field? How well can he translate from what he learns in the meeting room onto the field? And then how he executes it. And then his effort, his ability to go out there and do what he needs to do, and effort-wise. So with these rookies, and don't listen. The best advice I can give a rookie when it comes to whatever you do on the field, go full speed at it. Because there's going to be veterans that you get into that nice little comfort zone and don't want you to go hard. But you're trying to make a team. You got to go. You got to go full. You got to go 100 miles per hour with everything you do, because you're being evaluated. I mean, you're being evaluated not only by your position coach, your head coach. I mean, they're marking stuff down. They've got people that are looking at what you're doing. So listen, when you're a rookie and you're your first time in the NFL, your head's going to spin. You're going to get so much information from what you need to do in the playbook, what you need to do on special teams, conditioning, all that kind of stuff. I just tell guys, listen, you've been doing this since Pop Warner. Now it's just the NFL. Just keep doing, just keep doing what you've been
doing.
It's
really a changing of the guard on defense, if you think about it. I mean, go back to OTAs last year. OTAs last year, you had Dante Fowler. You had Jalen Ramsey. You had Ngakoue. You had Telvin. You had Malik Jackson. You had Deshaun Gibson. You had all these guys. None of those guys, either by sitting out a year in Telvin's case, by free agency and Malik's and Deshaun Gibson's case, or just not being here with Jalen and Ngakoue, it is a complete and total changing of the guard on defense. The 2017 defense that the Jaguars knew is no more. So we'll see if they've drafted well enough and if the backups can come in and contribute, but that 2017 defense is a shell of what it is now.
Well, it's funny. We were joking, not joking, just asking the question, can there be challengers for those two safety spots? They're already going down the depth chart to give those two guys a chance to win the job. So it's not hope. They think they've got two good players, Ronnie Harrison playing a bunch last year, and Jared Wilson's been with his team longer than Ronnie Harrison has, but just hasn't had as many impactful plays. So they're definitely putting their faith in developing these two guys, because after that, you don't have a whole lot. You really don't. Trey Herndon's a guy who was able to make the team last year, who was able to step up and do some different things. Quentin Meeks was able to step up and do some different things.
Remember when Quentin Meeks almost killed me last year?
Yeah.
I was standing on the sideline at OTAs. There was a ball that was overthrown. 43's running full sprint right at me.
Yeah.
Saw my life flash right before my eyes.
Did you move?
I did, very quickly.
That was good.
Oh, good job.
Very quickly. It would have ended very badly for me.
Yeah, move. But Cody Davis is a guy that was brought in as a special teamer. And so he's not necessarily viewed as a guy that can step up and win the job, I don't think. And so we'll find out. C.J. Revis is the other guy that's behind those two safeties. So if you're talking about a position that's thin, there's not a lot behind him that you could say, hey, they can step in and take it.
Is it an unfair comment to say the window of opportunity on the Jaguar defense has closed based on where it was in 2017?
I don't think that's unfair. You know what happens
it's
now?
Completely different, man.
Yeah,
it's worrisome to me because it's a lot of new guys there that you don't know.
Wait, the window of opportunity for what? What's the opportunity?
To be a contending team, to be a top five, top ten defense.
That's what they were hanging their hat on, was that defense?
I think they can still be a top five, top ten defense.
Why?
Yeah, because I think the key components are in place. I mean, clearly they're not the same team, but if you've got the key components in place and you've got other guys that you think are going to be good, are going to not only be good, but are going to be guys that will be part of that system. The two safeties are a perfect example. Mm-hmm. They didn't draft the safety. Why? Because they feel really good about those two guys. So my point is the key components are there. I think they can still be an elite defense. And I think that defense, and we've said this all along, the defense is going to be a lot more confident and play better because they're not going to be on the field as much as they were last year.
In theory.
That really is going to be the most important part of this defense having an A grade, and people are still projecting them as being one of the more dominant defenses. But to have that A grade, you need to get a blow on the sidelines to where you're not out there and the time of possession is just ticking away with the other team having the football.
Yeah,
you can't have that.
I think the best thing that could happen for these OTAs is, as far as offensively, what kind of identity are we going to have offensively?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of timing is Nick Foles going to have with the receivers? Are we going to have 3/5 of our offensive line back? How's Cam Robinson coming along? How is Linder coming along? How's Juwan Taylor going to adapt at the right tackle position? Who are going to be our tight ends? All that. So I think essentially it's going to be very important that offensively that, you know, we get everything together with OTA. Yeah.
I'm looking at Chris Conley. I'm looking at DJ Chark. Those are guys that I think you watch them and you think, okay, yeah, DJ Chark looks like he's taking the next step.
Mm.
Conley looks like he can be a guy who can step in and be one of the first three guys out there. That's my question. Who are the first three receivers right now? We're talking about competition at other spots. Who are the first three receivers?
Yeah,
and we know where Marquise Lee is in his rehab? We have no idea.
And
we know where Cam in his rehab, for that matter.
Yeah, who's going to be our number one?
Yeah, hopefully we'll see a little bit of Marquise Lee working on the side or whatever the case may be, but you're not going to truly know that guy's back
he's got
pads on, until he takes a hit in a preseason game, because I don't think it'll happen until then. But you are talking about a massive – turnover when it comes to talent on this football team. Whether or not Barry Church was good enough at the end to have a starting safety spot, you can debate that all day long. But they let him go. They move another guy in there in Ronnie Harrison. Tayshaun Gibson, good, but not great. And so now that last line of defense is completely up for debate as to whether or not they're going to get it done. Then you add in the linebacking position, and all of a sudden, you're back seven. You have two outstanding cornerbacks, two new safeties, possibly two new linebackers. We're going to find out how that all shakes out. Still could be Quincy Williams and Miles Jack. It still could be Miles Jack and Jake Ryan, some combination. But you're having basically half of that back seven that's going to be different.
Well, that's the thing. In 2017, your back seven was Miles Jack, Telvin Smith, Paul Posluszny. Mm-hmm. Barry Church, Deshaun Gibson, A.J. Boyd, Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, if you're going
Ramsey.
Back to 2017,
I go back to 2017 because that's when they went to the AFC title game.
Yeah, it was still at least a top five defense last year.
It was. But by my point, Posluszny's gone.
Yeah.
Telvin's gone. Church is gone. Gibson's gone. That's four of your seven guys that are gone. You're replacing them with probably Jake Ryan, maybe Quincy Wilson, who up until 4 weeks ago, nobody in Jacksonville knew
existed.
Quincy Williams. I keep saying Wilson. Quincy Williams. My point exactly. 4 weeks ago, nobody in Jacksonville probably knew Quinnen Williams had a brother.
Yeah.
And now he's here as a third-round pick. And then Jared Wilson and Ronnie Harrison. Look, I hope I'm not shortchanging these guys. I don't mean to be. I just think that you're replacing veteran guys that have done a lot in this league with unknowns.
Yeah, yeah.
And to say that these unknowns can come right in and pick up where these really good players left off,
right.
I think is – really looking at the glass half full.
But it is. It's totally looking at it. It's like we just said. Everyone could write a new bio next to the wide receiver's name as if they were, you know, these up-and-coming stars. They weren't. DJ Chark was not a bright spot on this football team last year, and now people are hoping against hope that he is this
year. Well, that's why you pay the people up top, your personnel department, your scouting department. That's why they pay them the big money. Obviously, they've made an evaluation that we could let those guys go. We can let the Barry Churches go because we have the talent behind them.
Yeah.
That costs less money, that could beat players just as well as the guys that they're paying the money to. So
you know, I think you're right about Church. I think Gibson and Jackson would still be here if the dollars made sense. I don't think they have a better player than Deshaun Gibson.
Don't forget,
just thought that was a financial deal.
Don't forget Malik did lose his job. So
right, but if I were to tell you, going to opening day, do you want Taven Bryan or Malik Jackson?
I agree, and I actually think it'll be an Avery Marcel. Darius combination, and it actually might even be a Calais inside.
That's what I'm thinking.
We are going to find out. Taven Bryan's going to be played exclusively, I think, as a three technique. So then you're going to find out whether that guy can be an interior defensive lineman that can make plays for you. And look, they had to turn it over. They had to. And finances, for the most part, finances force you to do that. And then subpar play is the next. Because Barry Church was a subpar safety. And Tayshaun Gibson was an average safety. So they had to move on from that.
Hey, Leon, go to your position, right tackle. If you're Cedric Obwehi or you're Will Richardson, you're going into the first day of on-the-field workouts and you see Juwan Taylor, second-round pick, got the Jaguars traded up to get. What's your mindset if you're Obwehi and Richardson, knowing you're competing against a guy that pretty much everybody in Jacksonville thinks is going
to
get
that
job?
Well, I would tell them to bring it. I would tell them to bring, if I'm either one of those guys, they're basically being slighted, to be quite honest with you, because everybody's just penciled Juwan Taylor in like he's the right tackle to be. And if I'm both of those guys, I'm going to make it very hard for him to get that position. If you're a competitor. If you're a competitor, you don't just let somebody get slotted in at your position that you've been here for the last couple of years. You tell this guy he's going to earn it. And Juwan Taylor should want to have to earn it. They shouldn't just have to pencil him. Listen, if Juwan Taylor, during the first day of OTAs, if he is the starting right tackle, I'm pissed.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that because
I am.
Hey, by the
I'm
way,
really, I'm pissed. Yeah.
Why?
No. I'm pissed as a competitor.
Yeah, if he's a competitor.
No, not as an evaluator. Yeah, okay. No, I think he's going to be the starter week one. But I'm saying if I'm on the team,
right.
If I'm Will Richardson and Aboye,
then yeah, I understand.
And the first day of OTAs, they got Juwan Taylor at right tackle. I'm like, whoa.
Remember,
bro.
Cam Robinson? They did the exact same thing. They said, we ain't putting you in as a starter.
You got to earn it. Yeah.
Not yet. You got to earn it. It's XL primetime. We'll keep it going on that subject. And then also, you know, work in a couple of college football notes, including recruiting some big names over the weekend, saying, I'm going there, and Clemson is loading up. That's all ahead right here on XL Primetime.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
21 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour, Leon Searcy will be heading out, enjoying the rest of this beautiful afternoon. And then we'll be out checking out OTAs tomorrow. You have
looking forward to being out there, Joe.
Yeah,
it's always a great time.
I want to see what Josh Allen looks like, just the physical specimen of this guy who took over the SEC. And we had Mark Stoops on, his coach, and he told a great story about how devoted this guy was to the craft, to coming out and being good. And then Juwan Taylor, for at least a little bit of social media that we've seen from him. Leon, he looks like he's having fun already. He's embracing this whole idea of coming in here. He's not – some guys, if they drop from what people were projecting as a seventh pick overall into the second round, they could just shut down social media and go into a full pout. Mm-hmm. This dude is fired up. Looks like he's fired up and ready to go.
Well, you know, hopefully he has a chip on the shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime you tumble that far down – listen, he's a first – he's a second-round pick, but he's a first-round talent.
Yeah.
Absolutely, first round. He just had teams that were before him just didn't need him. It was no need for him until where they picked him at. So I mean, if he comes in, I hope he comes in with a chip on the shoulder. I hope he comes in with a little attitude, a little aggression.
Tomorrow's a big day for me because I'm gonna choose my guy. Joe will tell you, I always choose one guy during the offseason. Very rarely do they ever make the final 53.
Yeah, they never make it,
but it's always an undrafted free agent that that's gonna be my guy for the next 3 months. I'll be rooting like heck for him, and then I want to see Quincy Williams. You know, we talked about him in the last segment. I want to see what the Jaguars saw in this guy to draft him out of Murray State in the third round. Again, you're not going to be able to see that much. No shoulder pads, no thumping. I get all that. But they talk about how fast this kid is. Well, we'll be able to see some of that tomorrow and some one-on-one drills and whatnot. So I'm going to take a good hard look at him. And then obviously, you know, the $88 million man will be here. And if Foles struggles against air, that's not going to be a good thing,
which
and
I
you
can't
want
imagine.
Foles to look good.
Are you going
to
come back and say it? Like, are you going to report that if he struggles against air?
Are you going to report it?
I'm not going to be there. I'm asking you.
Oh, you're not going to be there?
No, I'm not going to be there.
Oh, okay. I'm going to report whatever the Jaguars allow me to report.
I'm going to look at it. If he didn't look good, he didn't look good. I mean,
yeah. If you're going to put me on the spot like that, I'm going to report whatever the Jaguars allow us to report.
I mean, what's to gain by trying to ask what someone's going to report or not? Seriously.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, I mean,
no, he's doing it because Lamb came in here and did his thing, and he wanted to put me on the spot that, which is fine. I totally get what Matt just did.
Yeah, but all I know is that we're going to go out there and we're going to try. The fans want to know what these guys look like, do they not? That's really what they're looking for more than anything else. And look, people can put the hammer down if they want. And it's this. I don't even look at this as whether, I got to be honest and truthful and all this kind of stuff. I just want to go see what the guys look like.
I'm not disagreeing with you. All I'm saying is if the guy that you're paying $100 million for is inaccurate the whole day, you come back and say, guess what?
You know,
he was inaccurate the whole day.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any problem with that at all.
No, there isn't. There isn't.
Yeah, I will have no problem saying that if that's what it looks like.
What they don't want is on 3rd and 7 when they're running a 2-minute drill.
They don't want situational.
Well, they got four wide receivers out there and Conley's in the slot. They don't want
that.
They don't want situationals. But I have no problem saying, golly. I don't know what they're seeing in this guy. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But I feel I can't imagine that being the situation is what I'm saying.
See, Lamb was in here saying that it's completely different. You can't say what you think. There's no opinions.
Yeah,
I'm fine with the situation. Yeah. So what?
Yeah, situational is what they're probably looking at. And this ain't the first NFL team to be a little paranoid about information.
They all get paranoid.
But if some dude comes in, he doesn't look like he's in shape, and he's struggling, of course. Yeah. That's fair game.
Yeah. And again, I just think that there's going to be those types of situations where you're going to figure out, okay, what do I report? What do I not report? And they, since Tom Coughlin in particular, came back here, they've kind of put the clamps down on those types of things. And look, we're the flagship station, but we've never been told you can or you can't, other than the guidelines that are spread among all the media. And I don't feel like we're being handcuffed.
Yeah, it's
really
not just us. It's everybody in Jacksonville. Yeah. We all get the same criteria. And by the way, this is nothing new. How many practices now are open in Gainesville and in Tallahassee? Oh, yeah. Everybody's shutting things down, college and the pros. Yeah. And from other media markets I've talked to around the NFL, it's very similar there. People are so paranoid and so
I was going to say, Matt, name the last practice you've been able to go into for college and be able to report on something because they don't let you see it. I mean, just imagine how little.
Well, I've been to practice. I just don't. I don't report what they're doing, right?
Yeah. And they're told, and you're told not to,
right?
You know, so that's
same exact thing.
Yeah, same kind of thing. But it's just imagine how cut off the fan has become, and totally reliant on the feed that comes out from the individual teams to tell you everything is rosy.
Right. Well, that's my whole point with Telvin. Like, I'm telling you right now, if I was the sports editor at the Times Union, I'd say, go find him.
Yeah.
Drive to Georgia and go find him.
Yeah. Man, like I said, my guess is someone has told him and nobody's been able to do it.
Let me ask you this question. So is the media and the fans out there, or is it just the media?
Just the media.
Yeah. Okay. And so once the fans are allowed in, then you can report whatever you want.
Yeah. Because once the fans are in there, they'll be tweeting out. Right,
that's what I was thinking. The fan will be being too tight.
Right. Here's what our depth chart looks like. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That'll be all over. It becomes very public.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's funny because for a while there, when training camps were open, they would have the fans come in, and then the Danny Snyders of the world, I think he was the first guy to do this, he charged $2, $3, $5, whatever it was, to come in. As soon as that happened, personnel people from other teams were allowed to come in, and you could do whatever. You could take video. Wow. Because once you charged, then you completely changed the game on somebody. No. But that's the way they were going with that. But, you know, this team has the potential – to look entirely different offensively, right? Mm-hmm. I think they have the potential to look entirely different with a capable passer, a set of receivers, and a tight end that can move the football, which is going to make Leonard Fournette and that running game much more successful as a whole. So I'm thinking we have the potential to for the first time in a while, to see a balanced football team that can hit you with a couple of different big weapons.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC.
So Ezekiel Elliott handcuffed but not charged after an incident at a Las Vegas music festival. Wow. And apparently he was bumping into the bodyguard and pushing him back toward the gate. The bodyguard was trying to protect, getting in his face, screaming at him.
Really?
They detained him but did not arrest him. That's what it's looking like right now.
You know, I don't know. What's your immediate reaction to that?
Well, he's got a Lakers jersey on, too, man.
Stay out of Vegas. That's the immediate. It's probably a good immediate reaction. It really is. But I just don't know why. And I know they all have handlers that are basically saying, don't do that. Don't do this. Let's get out of here. You know, that type of stuff. But sometimes, whatever it is, whatever is either the instinct or the attitude or the who knows, being overserved, whatever, you get ticked off and you think you should be able to get your way. And if you start bumping up against security guards and such, you're going to get in trouble.
One of the best decisions I ever made in regards to Vegas was waiting until I was married and in my 30s to go. I went 2 years ago, had a great time, but I can imagine if I was in college or if I went out there with the boys in my 20s, things would have gotten pretty interesting. There's a lot of temptation out there.
I'll just tell you this much. Most guys that are in their 30s and married, that are in their 40s and married, that are in their 50s and married, they go out to Vegas and they still get crazy.
Well,
they still get crazy.
Here's the deal. Zeke was with his girlfriend, mm-hmm. and we know the problems prior, mm-hmm. but he got suspended for the problems with his girlfriend, okay? Same girlfriend, okay? So he was spotted in the parking lot at the Electric Daisy Carnival around 3 a.m. Saturday morning arguing with his girlfriend. He never put his hands on the woman, but he used his body to block her from walking away several times during the screaming argument.
Mm.
It's just not a good look. Now that you bring her into this.
Yes,
well, not only that he's Zeke, he knows everybody knows he's Zeke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would he put himself in that situation? That's the thing.
But now that you bring her into it, then that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, he's still manhandling the woman.
Yeah.
Alcohol,
late at night. Oh, that's just not a good look.
No.
And it's not a good look for a man who's looking for $100 million moving forward.
Right, yeah. right. That's, I mean, and his, the GM, Stephen Jones, said as recent as a week and a half ago, he's the cornerstone of our franchise. He's the guy.
Yeah, and keep in mind, he was suspended for 6 games and never was arrested or charged.
Right.
Never. And so he could be looking at if something like this brings him back into the – puts him on the commissioner's list and they take a look at it, he could be facing a pretty dang long suspension.
You know there's video out there somewhere.
There is video.
In the parking lot. Is there video?
There is video.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Jeez. And that adds to it. We all know that. Yes. Whether it should or should not, if there is video attached to something, the odds are the punishment will be more severe than if it's just word of mouth.
And I know
you've seen it time and time again.
I know you won't be shocked by this. TMZ was the first to report.
Well, of course they were.
And so TMZ always has someone who's willing to send them the video. And
well, because they're always willing to pay for
the
video.
And so everyone says TMZ's reporting. That's because someone got in touch with them and said, I've got the video. And that's how it goes down. But you're talking about a bad look. Just the whole headline. Handcuffed at Vegas festival, .. after knocking man to the ground.
Mm.
That's never going to be good. And then especially if you put the...
And the screaming with his girlfriend.
Yeah, if you put the girlfriend part into that storyline.
Who literally looks like she doesn't have pants on. Which would be one reason I'd be screaming at if that was his girlfriend.
Right? All of a sudden, we're all Googling right now.
Yeah.
Like, scroll down
festival
bit,
attire.
Man. I don't know. That's not festival attire, bro. That's like... That's all kinds of wrong. All kinds.
Hey. Don't judge, man. Welcome to Rockville Festival. I mean, come on. All right, Leon, take the rest of the afternoon off and don't go to Vegas today.
Absolutely.
Okay?
You know, I love the silence between you two because you're both frantically looking for it.
I'm just trying to get it to load is all I'm trying to get it to do. I'm just looking at it. I told you exactly what I was doing. I was going right to TMZ to check it out. And as I'm looking, apparently she lost her skirt. That's really the only thing I can say.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
All right, Leon.
All right, gentlemen. See you tomorrow.
Have a good afternoon. We keep it going.
Leon.
2 o'clock hour. We'll say hello to Mark Carnival, who was on the grounds at Bethpage Black State Park and the Black Course for the impressive PGA Championship win for Brooks Koepka. We'll talk with him in about 15, 20 minutes, get back on the Jaguars front as well. Recruiting, what happened over the weekend, we'll tell you next right here on XL Primetime.
This is XL Primetime. Brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010XL.
21 minutes in front of the 2 o'clock hour, XL Primetime. Joe C., Ryan Green, Matt Hayes. We got J.J. LaSalva in there with a flock of interns. He could boss not only Dylan around, Graham around, and cameras everywhere, hanging out. On a Monday, thanks to Monroe's Smokehouse Barbecue, everybody. Hopefully off to a good start on a Monday.
By the way, I don't know who that camera guy is. So he might
it's
not even
Graham.
Work here. He's just like coming and filming y'all.
So he, yeah. So you're saying he might just be
be just a creep.
Yeah, he got a badge to get in, and he got past Taylor and Donna security and got in here. And next thing you know, he's setting up Nikons left and right.
And we're like, oh, he looks everywhere. Important. Whatever.
How long till Leon breaks his camera, by the way?
If the first edit and this shows up on TMZ and it, does not it's not like a glowing shot of Leon.
Yeah.
He'll break all three.
Yeah,
cameras.
Leon's backed into the camera twice so far.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he has. He has. But he's a big burly.
Third time might be a charm for Leon. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, it was the Tracy Morgan skit about diabetes, so
we were cracking up about that one earlier, which was pretty funny. because we were talking about some of the great sitcoms and some of the great endings, and 30 Rock was one of Leon's favorite. I love 30 Rock. I thought it had just great writing. And Tracy Morgan and really all the characters, Alec Baldwin, Tina Fey, you can go on and on and on. That was a funny, funny series. And some of them, they only go for so long, and that's perfect. They don't need to go on forever. But we've had some suggestions of other sitcoms or other TV shows that had lousy endings, lousy season finales. Based on the reaction for everybody out there when it comes to Game of Thrones.
Some people were so angry last night about Game of Thrones. And, again, I don't really know how to relate because I never watched it, but
I just know,
of the things they were saying would make a sailor blush.
I just know this. There aren't too many happy reactions on Twitter.
Woo.
There aren't.
Really?
They're most angry. They pan everything. So people, like I said earlier, spend millions of dollars. They're a huge success producing a series like Game of Thrones, And now there's a petition out with over how many?
Over a million signatures.
Over a million signatures telling, directing, demanding that the Game of Thrones folks on HBO redo the entire season. Not even the finale. The whole damn thing. Because they didn't like it. And so it's just, it's comical. It really is. But that's the movement that is out there right now. Now, speaking of movement, when a free agent gets signed to the National Football League, there's always high hopes that's attached to it, especially when it comes to the quarterback position. And if you go over in your mind a lot of free agents that have gone from place to place, the percentage of success is not nearly as high as you would think. And we can go on and on and on with the list of free agents that have gone, that have either signed in free agency or been dealt or whatever. Peyton Manning would be a good example of a guy that left Indianapolis, ultimately went to the Denver Broncos. Things worked out real well. Couple Super Bowl trips. Ultimately, the highest scoring offense 1 year. They ended up losing that year to the Seattle Seahawks, but then came back and won a couple of years later. And so he would be a success when it comes to a guy that left one team and went to another. But there aren't that many when you go over it. Can Nick Foles be a success as a free agent signing?
I'll give our buddy D-Rock, Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com, credit. He has this piece. It's a really good piece that's up on the main NFL page on ESPN.com, basically saying the Jaguars are hoping that Nick Foles can buck the trend of free agent quarterbacks in the NFL. And I believe he goes back to the year 2000. So we're talking basically two decades.
Bad ones.
Now, there is Peyton Manning. Absolutely. There is Brad Johnson, right? Brad Johnson leaving Minnesota, going to Tampa Bay, and being the starting quarterback for the Super Bowl winning Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So there have been some good guys sign multi-year deals with other teams in free agency at the quarterback position. But you forget about some of the bad ones. You know, Jeff Blake in New Orleans, John Kitna in Cincinnati, Jake Plummer.
The biggest
in
one,
Denver.
The biggest one for me is Brock Osweiler. Yeah. Getting someone to pay and sign a deal that was around $18 million a year. It's still baffling to me that, A, they didn't have a conversation, personnel people to coach when they decided on Brock Osweiler. Just think of that on its, you know, alone, all by itself. They didn't discuss the idea of signing this guy with Bill O'Brien, the head coach, which is insane. And then they ultimately sign him for this huge deal. And then the thing that gets me more than anything else is they got Cleveland to take $18 million off the books and took Brock Osweiler off their hands because Cleveland had reached a point where they had to spend money or they were going to get fined. I don't even know if they were going to get draft picks stripped away, but they were going to get fined. That was one of the worst ever.
Breeze is the best, right?
I would think Breeze is the best.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Breeze, the Saints just got lucky there. With the shoulder injury, the Dolphins didn't clear him.
It was just
New Orleans did, and the rest is history. The guy's going to the Hall of Fame.
Wasn't that a trade as well?
Yeah, and it was a deal that went down because they were trying to figure out. We go back to the Saban discussion with Dante Culpepper and Drew Brees, and there was at least a transaction that took place. And isn't that the case with Peyton, too? I'm trying to remember. No, actually, he just
I think the Colts released him. Yeah,
yeah, he was a free agent. Never mind.
And you think of Drew Bledsoe in Dallas. You think of Matt Flynn. Remember Matt Flynn? He had that 6-touchdown game in Green Bay. Gives him $1 billion. Yeah. They draft Russell Wilson.
And you never
see
him.
Wilson beats Flynn out in training camp.
That's
unbelievable.
Him. And he had, what was it? It was a mega deal.
Yeah, because he had the one game where he went ballistic in Green Bay.
And for years, I would still have my LSU boys, which, by the way, Michelob, one of the LSU boys in town over the weekend, coming in from New Iberia, Louisiana, still in my ear about how Matt Flynn didn't get the chance that he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, still a little bitter there. And then, of course, Mike Glennon in Chicago. They gave him buku dollars. It didn't work out. Cousins last year in Minnesota was a failure. I'm sorry. You get to the NFC title game.
He wasn't.
You give $87 million to Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
And then you don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, he
wasn't.
That's
a failure for Kirk Cousins in year one.
Yeah, I am not arguing with that at all.
And that's what you hope Nick Foles doesn't turn into. If Nick Foles turns into Kirk Cousins, that will not be good, at least where Cousins was a year ago.
He threw for basically 4,300 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. So on numbers alone, that's not bad. There's nothing wrong with
that. Really good.
It's 30 and 10. If you average 3 touchdowns for every 1 pick, you're doing pretty good. But the team went 8-7-1. And when it mattered most, he was not making enough plays. So yeah, that's that goes in the big L column there. And he still, by the way, has a chance with those numbers in mind to keep it going and prove people wrong. But for right now, that money, not a good spend. That was, by the way, in the same neighborhood of what Jacksonville is signing Nick Foles.
Well, and I think that the easy answer to this question is, and guys, tell me if I'm wrong, the reason quarterbacks become free agents is because the team they're with thinks they're done. If you have a quarterback worth his salt, you're not going to let him go.
Yeah, and what had
nine
happened,
times out of ten, anyway.
Yeah, at least what had happened with Kirk Cousins is he basically played the game that the team wanted with the 1 year deals, and then wouldn't negotiate with them and wanted out. And the team probably could have come up with a way to keep him happy, but that was one that was just two sides butting heads, and they had seen enough good probably to want to keep him. But that relationship was so fractured.
Well, you know you got to think about this with the quarterbacks too. You're going to pay.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. You are going to pay.
And the one good thing about it is that Kirk Cousins deal was a 3-year, $84 million guaranteed, whereas Nick Foles is for a 4-year and it's for less guaranteed. So you have to at least look at that as a positive here in Jacksonville.
Right. If you're not going to draft one and develop him, if you're not going to give away multiple draft picks to move up and get one, you have to pay.
Right.
As simple as that.
And this team had to pay because they had spent 5 years trying to develop a guy and it didn't work.
Well, as we talked about, the Jaguars have had awful free agent acquisitions. Hugh Douglas, Jerry Porter, just to name a few. If Nick Foles doesn't work out, I don't think I would ever put him in that category because you had to get Nick Foles. They didn't have any other choice.
Well, he could still go down as a free agent bust for sure.
But I'm not going to blame Coughlin or Caldwell because it had to be done.
He had to
take the shot.
Being under the umbrella of the mandate, you mean?
Well, yeah.
You have to win, and you need a quarterback, and he was the best option available this offseason.
Yeah, like most of these guys, you probably felt the same way. Minnesota made a calculated move, letting go of Case Keenum after his one and only good year, for my money, and went and spent the big bucks. So they really did take a huge chance, and in some people's eyes, maybe a chance that wasn't necessary because they had gotten good quarterback play from Case. Probably just felt like they weren't going to keep getting it.
Then let's look at it this way. Let's say Dwayne Haskins goes in it, mm-hmm. the Redskins, plays really well, becomes one of the, in his first year becomes a Baker Mayfield-type quarterback.
Sure.
Then what's the decision? Is that a mistake? Was it a mistake to pay $100 million?
If you're 2 years later, then it probably – are you talking Jacksonville versus Dwayne? Okay,
yeah,
I thought you were talking about Washington.
No, I'm talking about
say goodbye to Kirk Cousins.
I'm talking about the decision to spend $100 million.
I feel like what they were looking at more than anything else was not taking advantage of a good defense, a great to a good defense,
right?
And wasting what was left of it, wasting the really important Jalen Ramsey years that are the next couple. And then wasting the money that you spent on A.J. Boye because now he's in his third year with the team. Last year, maybe for Calais Campbell. Those types of guys.
Right, it's now. It's definitely now. Instead of – it might happen this year or it's probably going to happen in a couple years. So it's now. They chose now.
I feel like that's what they were looking at. And Leonard Fournette also a real important player that could have a really solid turnaround after a lousy injury-plagued and off-the-field plagued year last year that – if you get the right guy, which I think they felt like they had to get the veteran.
Right, and I agree with the move. I think it was the smart move. I think it was the prudent thing to do. Financially, however you want to look at it, it was a smart move to do. Yeah. But the reality is, if Haskins plays really well, they're going to be double. Yeah.
They'll be looked at. But I think you answered your own question. They had to go in all now. Mm-hmm. You look at the rookies last year. As good as Baker Mayfield was, as good as Sam Darnold was, as good as these rookies were, not one of them sniffed the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Rookies normally don't make the playoffs as starting quarterbacks. They just don't, if you go by statistics and history. And with a Jaguar defense that maybe has Calais Campbell for one more year, maybe has Marcell Dareus for one more year, you don't know about the future of Ngakoue right now. You think you do, but you don't.
Right.
Who knows what could happen?
That's the heart and soul of this team.
Right. You got to go in now on Nick Foles. And if Dwayne Haskins or Daniel Jones or whomever turns out to be better than Foles, well, yeah, that's going to suck. But for the here and now, Foles was the best option for this team in 2019.
And when you think about the moves that a lot of these these franchises make, most of them are wrapped in desperation. And in the case of Eli Manning, they played him for a decade and a half, and they now know the end is near, and they put it off for a year, and then now they had no choice but to go quarterback.
This is not a proactive league. It's a reactive league. There's no doubt about it.
And then Washington would not be in this situation had it not been for Alex Smith and a horrific leg injury that's going to put him on the sideline for an entire year. And so they were left with basically no choice, already having signed Case Keenum, but probably not feeling great about that situation. So they had to do it. It's just it is such a gamble and a roll of the dice, which direction to go in, and who knows, you know, what the odds are as far as which one's right more often.
Having said that, I hope Matt's correct and that Dwayne Haskins goes on to have a very good career, and I'll tell you why. In the second round, Joe, of my rookie dynasty draft the weekend, I went Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah.
I got Montgomery, the running back for Chicago out of Iowa State in the first round.
Yeah.
Dwayne Haskins sitting there in the second round with the knowledge that all I had was Pat Mahomes as my starting quarterback. I had nobody else.
Yeah, don't phrase that like that.
Right, that's all you had.
Right, but if he were to get hurt, I have no other starting quarterbacks on the roster.
That's pretty good. But now are you always, whenever you say I have no other starting quarterbacks, were there any other veterans that were available?
No, this is a rookie draft.
All rookies. Yeah,
so and Kyler Murray was way gone. I was hoping Haskins fell to me in round two. 16-team league. I mean, this is...
You didn't trade up to get Daniel Jones?
Did not. Daniel Jones was still on the board.
Yeah.
But I think Haskins is going to be good, and I was happy I was able to get him in the rookie draft.
All right, let's say hello to Mark Carnival. He was up at Bethpage Black. We'll get an idea of what he thought about that little run that Brooks Koepka was on, where he was wobbling big time but was still able to close out and win his fourth major in less than 2 years, 23 months we're talking about. So we'll dial his phone coming up here in a second. We also have a big event coming up Friday night at Bragan Field at the baseball grounds of Jacksonville. It is Walk-Off Charities, Frank Frangie and the bunch. They will have their home run derby along with all sorts of goodies. JJ, they got plenty to enjoy Friday night, and we will give away a four-pack of tickets.
Let's do it. Free food, restaurants will be there, even a chance to go down and hit yourself.
All right, that's awesome. Four-pack of tickets with Walk-Off Charities. The first pitch Friday night. The Frangie Show will be out there. We will give you a chance to win a four-pack. Caller number four at 641-1010.
This is XL Primetime on 1010XL, built by Preferred Builders.
Hanging out on a Monday afternoon. Hopefully everybody's doing good out there. OTAs tomorrow. Before we look ahead, let's look back at what was a great week up at Bethpage Black, the Black Course at the Bethpage State Park. Our buddy Mark Carnival, you heard him right here on our coverage that we were able to air courtesy of Westwood One with the entire team calling the PGA Championship. Carney, a former winner on the PGA Tour, former Rookie of the Year and a Jacksonville resident. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, Joe. It was a great week, but a long week, I can tell you that.
I can imagine if you're legging Bethpage, the Black Course, that alone, I don't know how many miles you might have walked or how many calories you might have burnt, but start there. Just the fatigue of that golf course, Carney, to have a guy dominate the way Brooks did, almost give it away late, but then, of course, ultimately hanging on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beast. It's an absolute beast. And even coming into the week, I mean, obviously anything can happen in this game, but certainly it was limited to, I believe, a certain number of players, maybe 10, 15 players that really, in my mind, had a legitimate chance to win. Obviously, he was one of them right at the top of the list, along with Dustin Johnson. He certainly felt like Rory McIlroy and maybe some other guys, but it's tough. There's a lot of elevation changes. You know, it was they had gotten a lot of rain leading up to the start of the championship, so the golf course was playing longer. But it's a beast, and if you get it off the fairway, it's as long a rough as I've seen in a tournament, certainly in championship golf in a long time. And if you got in there, it was just a challenge, and it was a lot of miles. Matter of fact, we joked with got a couple jokes with Peter Costas, or conversation with Peter Costas, and even Mark Fulcher, caddy for Justin Rose. Of course, the Ryder Cup will be there in 2024. And Mark Fulcher said, each player is going to need two caddies for the Ryder Cup, because going 36 holes there is going to be a struggle. And then Peter Costas says, yeah, I think I'm going to pick a team. Everyone's going to be about 25, 6'2", 225 pounds, and I'll go with that. So it's going to be a challenge.
You know, Mark, obviously, Koepka, Brooks Koepka, seven-shot lead going in to Sunday. I turned it on, and you can imagine my surprise late in the round yesterday when I see Dustin Johnson was one shot off the pace. And I'm thinking, holy cow, what is going on? What was the vibe on the course? Because correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think anyone in the history of golf had blown a seven-shot or more lead after 54 holes of a major. And Brooks Koepka came darn close to making some bad history yesterday.
No, Hacker, you're right. I mean, it's never happened. And certainly, as we started the final round, if you were going to look at someone that could make a run, it would be Dustin Johnson. But the way Brooks had been playing through 54 holes, you didn't expect him to have happened what did to him. But I can tell you this. He only hit six fairways yesterday, so he missed eight. Coming into the final round, he had only missed 16 through three rounds. So he struggled with the driver yesterday. And to start off that run of four straight bogeys, he missed the fairway at 11. He missed the fairway at 12. Missed the fairway at 13. And that's what led to the three bogeys. But then he got on a bit of a train. And, of course, on the short par 3, 14th, as soon as he hit his golf ball, the wind just stopped. And if anyone was watching this, I mean, he missed the flagstick by 30-some yards. So it was funny. And after the round, when I interviewed him, I said, you know, what were you thinking when he made four straight bogeys? I was thinking, I just need to make a par. Of course, he had two really good tee shots on 15 and 16, and DJ helped him a little bit by bogeys at 16 and 17. But, yeah, it got very interesting. The fans were screaming for DJ. I think they just wanted to, fight. You know, they didn't want to run away. And DJ was giving him some hope. So, but in the end, the guy that won deserved to win. He played the best. I was with him all 4 days, and very impressive.
Hey, Mark, I want to circle back to what you said earlier about you could tell there was only a limited number of guys who could win that tournament. Are we getting to the point with the majors when they're at long courses? And again, Pebble Beach isn't exactly a short course. When you're at a long course, when it's tight, you know, when you've got the long cuts. Are we getting to a point where you've got to be one of these guys on the tour, like Brooks, like Rory, like DJ, that are just in fantastic shape, not just in fantastic shape, but that are muscular? These guys are big guys. Are we getting to the point where these are the guys that are going to win these tournaments now?
I don't think entirely. I mean, certainly when you look at majors that Brooks has won, those golf courses blended that, and there was no question. I think when we go to Pebble Beach, it's going to, there are a lot more players who are going to be in the mix to win the U.S. Open. But I tell you, it's interesting. I mean, the game has evolved that way. I hope it doesn't entirely get focused that way because there's so many good players out there, and you want it to be a test of golf. I thought it was kind of a little whiny, but understood what Bryson DeChambeau said. He was, like, complaining about it, that it was just for the long hitters or whatever, but, you know, I read some things on Twitter and people just said, well, hit it in the fairway then, which is true.
right.
But yeah, I mean, with the thickness of the rough at Bethpage in particular, it favored a guy who was strong and long. I hope that's not the case, Matt, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, they're going to Port Rush for the Open Championship next year. They're at Wingfoot for the U.S. Open. They're at Harding Park for the PGA. And I'm not exactly sure where the Open Championship is, but you know, I mean, there has been that trend over the years. That's what they've done, and I just hope that's not the case.
We're talking with Mark Carnevale. You, of course, can hear him PGA Tour live coverage, SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio throughout the year. You can download that app and check it out. And, of course, we had the coverage this weekend with the major championship and much smaller greens at Pebble. So that's going to be a factor, I would think. But when you look at him, and what I liked, Mark, was the resiliency that when he went through that stretch of four bogeys in a row, and I don't know how many guys would have been able to pull themselves out of that, but he said the chance of DJ absolutely fired him up, ticked him off, allowed him to hit the reset button. That was as impressive as it gets because we've seen others collapse in that moment.
Yeah, and again, I get back to the fact of how well he played through 54 holes to give him that sort of leeway. But no, I mean, Brooks Koepka is a guy. It has been quite some time since I actually followed him on the golf course. In his three previous majors, I was the analyst. This past week, I was on course You know, I was with Heath, Tiger, and Molinari for the first 2 days, and then I was with Brooks the last two. Impressive. And what I like, one of the things I really like about his, not only he is as a golfer, but as a person and how he sort of presents himself, you know, I mean, he's confident and he does it his way. And, you know, I love this comment, you know, when someone asks him about a sports psychologist, he's like, I don't have one. I know what I'm doing out there, which, you know, would lead to a whole nother discussion on my end, because I think that's there's too much reliance on coaches and sports psychologists. I mean, you got to figure it out. It's a game. Figure it out. It's just, and there's, again, there's all this confirmation that's needed. And I like the fact that he doesn't need that. And he even said, look, when I'm here at the golf course, I'm here to work. You know, I may not have this outgoing personality off the course. I'm different. And he's true to himself, and he is who he is. And I like that. He's not trying to be anybody else but Brooks Koepka. And I think, one, that's why he's successful in major championships. And I think people want to see him more successful in other tournaments. But at the end of the day, a lot of people would trade their records to have four major championships.
Hey, Mark, final one for me. Last month, Tiger Woods made history, one of the greatest moments maybe in the history of the game, coming back and winning at Augusta for the first time in so long. Next major, he misses the cut. What about Tiger's game was not on Thursday and Friday?
Well, he was off. I mean, he didn't miss the cut by but a shot, but you could just see the shots he was trying to execute. He wasn't executing them. He even made a comment about Brooks. I mean, I even mentioned it when I was covering them. It's like Brooks has given Tiger a dose of what Tiger gave everybody for so many years. He just overpowered the golf course. I think what we cannot overlook is Tiger is 43 years old. He's been through a lot of physical issues, mental issues. Look, now we know that he prepares himself to play and win every time. You know, everybody's going to say, well, he should have played at Wells Fargo. Well, it's easy for us to say that, and easy for us to say that now. I think it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, there was some speculation maybe he was injured, some other stuff. I mean, he didn't play poorly, but he just really didn't execute shots like we're used to seeing him hit. And I would go back to some other things. Like, you know, like even with like a when we see Brooks win four majors and we saw Rory win four majors, you know, Tiger is not the Tiger of old. He's not. He's not the guy that dominated the tour in the 2000s. And, you know, he's not going to be that player again. So he's not going to – we can't expect him to be at that high level every time he plays. And like with Brooks Koepka, we can't expect him to be Tiger Woods. He's nowhere near Tiger's career and resume at this point. So I think the expectations of the people to follow the game and cover the game have to be tempered a little bit, because I think we're too anxious to think that, hey, if this is the same Tiger, now he's going to come out and dominate.
Mark, by the way, you did a great job on Westwood One. I was listening to you while my car was in the shop, and I was getting ready to pay a fat bill for an air conditioner. So you made it feel a lot better than on Sunday. So let me say this to you. So let's say Brooks wins out of Pebble Beach. Do we start to now? That's 5-9. Do we start talking about where do we put this in history now, in perspective, along with other big runs?
Well, yeah. I mean, because he would have won five major championships in eight attempts, and I'm not sure anyone else has done that.
Well, think about this, Mark. And going back to what you said about Tiger Woods, is that Tiger has won 15 majors. And that's about 15% of his work, or about 18% of his work, mm-hmm. compared to Brooks winning four of his six titles or majors, and that's 2/3 of his work. And so you just have to look at it. What he's doing is special, but he's got to do a lot of other things to be anywhere in that same company as Eldrick. But real quick, before we get you out of here, the one quote that came out of the press conference that is definitely stuck, he said, you know, I think the question was basically asked, you know, where is the greatest disrespect that you feel like you've been given in your time playing golf? And he said, when someone said I wasn't tough enough, and he said that pissed me off. And then he said it again, and he was super hot when he said it. And then they asked who said it, and he goes, I think we all know. And he was referring to Brandel Chamblee, which I thought was just a crazy comment during Masters Week. That was pretty wild, wasn't it? A major motivator.
It was, and it was interesting enough this morning. in my hotel. I happened to be watching a replay of, live from the PGA Championship. Brandon was on there, and, his perspective on it is it was taken out of context. I guess what Brandon was saying, and I'm not speaking up for Brandon, and I would agree with what Brooks said.
Mm-hmm.
He sure is tough enough, but according to what Brandon said, it was more tough enough elite. Or, I mean, there was some, the context of it wasn't correct. He never said he wasn't tough, but I guess it was in response to a question. Again, I'm repeating something that I wasn't in there, but
right.
Players have to use whatever it is to motivate themselves, and if that motivates them, absolutely, good on him. Brandel has a reputation of saying a lot of things, and if people let that get under their skin, they're going to have trouble doing anything. So people don't like players, and anybody don't like bad things said about them. And I don't know if it's a bad thing to say that someone's not tough enough, but if you're an athlete and you watch what Brooks Koepka has done, then there's something wrong if you don't think he's tough enough.
Yahtzee. I agree. That's for sure. He used that and the DJ chant as motivation, and it certainly worked. That's for sure. Hey, dude, we appreciate it. Good stuff as always. We will, I'm sure, visit when we get to Pebble Beach.
You got it, guys. You have a great day.
All right, buddy. Take care. Mark Carnevale, make sure you check him out on Twitter. You can check him out on PGA Tour Live and SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio.
It's interesting. Real quick, what I was trying to get out of Mark there is Brooks kind of like Big Game Bob, Robert Horry, where he's
– Well
– I mean, because you always say, well, he doesn't win away from the majors. Does he have to start winning away from the majors for people to say he's elite?
Yeah, let's touch on that real quick, because I would not put him in the Big Game Bob category. And we'll explain that coming up here in just a second. Also, a year from Tom Coughlin, what he had to say this morning from the TCJ Fund Golf Tournament coming up.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC.
We talked about the Jaguars being on the field for OTAs beginning tomorrow. A lot of teams are around the league or on the field today for organized team activities. One of them, the Washington Redskins. And we told you in the noon hour that one of their new starting linebackers, Reuben Foster, went down with a knee injury, was carted off the field, had a cast around his knee, and was reportedly in tears seen leaving the practice facility. Well, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network tweets out moments ago, Jay Gruden, the head coach of the Redskins, his comments on Reuben Foster following today's practice. Quote, this is Jay Gruden, "I don't know how to process it, really. We've had some bad luck the last couple of years, but this one here takes the cake." So, if you listen to that quote by Jay Gruden, probably not good news on the Reuben Foster injury front.
Yeah, and it could be just he's saying we're snake bit. Every time you turn around, somebody's hurt. It may not be major, but it certainly could be telling with that comment. And just on the heels of that, this is good news, but this was also bad news before. Darius Geis will be a full go at training camp. Well, he was one of the injuries we're talking about before he ever really got going. In Washington.
Preseason last year, right? Preseason game two or three.
And so he'll at least be a full go, but he was one of the guys that you thought you were looking forward to having, especially when you were trying to replace another guy in the run game, and you lost him immediately. All right, real quick, back to the question as far as is Brooks Koepka more of like a Big Game Bob, referring to Robert Horry, who was part of the Rockets, part of the Lakers. He was winning rings left and right. And Big Shot Bob hit some real timely shots, especially from the wing. I mean, just some timely shots. But he was by no means a leader of a team that won championships. He was a very good situational player. I just look at Brooks Koepka. A, it's an individual versus a team. And so Brooks Koepka, everything he's doing, he's accomplishing basically on his own. And I look at the fact you can't take away four majors from anybody. Four major championships already puts him in the company, puts him in some really rare air. And the fact that he's one of only four guys to win four major titles in a span of eight starts is something special. Ben Hogan being the other one, along with Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. So that's really something.
If you're on a list with Hogan, Nicklaus, and Woods, you're probably doing something right.
But Phil Mickelson versus John Daly, who had a better career? Well, it's an easy question now because Phil has, I think, five majors now.
Right.
And John Daly doesn't have as many majors and has just a a percentile of the wins. But there was a conversation way back when, before Phil actually won his first major, he was like 0 for 37, something in that neighborhood. And they would say, well, did Daly with two, did he have a better career? John Daly says, hell no. I would take A, the wins, B, the earnings that go along with the wins, and the notoriety of constantly winning versus being a flash in the pan, which in some ways that's what you'd argue with John Daly winning the PGA back in the early 90s and then just kind of catching fire and winning an Open Championship, you know, many years later. I hope Brooks Koepka can keep winning and win other big tournaments instead of just – I mean, he's won six times and four of them have majors.
Well, I mean, you can do this with any sport. You mentioned Robert Horry. One of the more fascinating shows Dempsey did, this was way back in the day. We were a part of Brand X together, Joe, all of us over at Brand X. We did a show for about 2 hours.
Losers.
What career would you rather have, Robert Horry or Charles Barkley?
Yeah, I'd rather have Barkley.
Why?
Because I'm the star. I'm the
now
man.
Keep in mind, Robert Horry made millions of dollars.
Oh, well.
And he's got, seven rings?
Yeah, but how much did Barkley make compared to Robert Horry?
No, I mean, I'm sure Barkley made a lot more.
Right.
But
so if
I give you $35 million and six rings,
yeah.
Or if I give you $70, $80 million and no rings.
Yeah, so it's twice as much money
I'll
or more.
I'll take the 70.
Huh?
Take the 70.
I mean, look.
This is my immediate answer. I'm the man if I'm Chuck. If I'm Big Shot Bob, I'm a role player. I'll take the guy who's the man over role player any day.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
That's so right. You'd rather be Big Shot
Draymond
Bob.
Green's a role player.
Yeah.
So hell of a role player.
Yeah, but he's getting rings, too.
They're not asking Robert Horry to be the host of a TNT show.
My point about Robert Horry is money is obviously a huge deal. Huge deal. And you got to factor that. Barkley made a lot more money than Robert Horry.
Which would you rather be?
35? I would never be able to spend $35
million. I think I'm going to hack on this one.
If you give me $35 million and six rings, I would probably take it.
Because when he's 75 and he's looking at his mantle, he's got six rings. When Barkley's 75.
I'm asking you to answer the
I think I have. Twice, actually, now.
You said I think I'd probably.
I would rather be Robert Horry.
Okay, that's all I wanted to hear. Because you would rather be a situational player, and Draymond Green's a great example. As opposed to, you know, the man, because
you say situational, and that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Horry's made some of the biggest shots in the history of the NBA playoffs.
Totally agree.
Still a role player.
Situational.
Well, again, I'll quote the Big Lebowski. That's your opinion.
Don't think Robert Horry was a role player?
I think Robert Horry, if I need to make a shot to win a playoff game, other than Michael Jordan, maybe Reggie Miller. I don't know how many more people I'm taking over Robert Horry.
I would take Ray Allen.
The guy did it time and time and time again.
I would
again.
Take Ray Allen, but hey, that's my opinion.
Man.
This is XL Primetime, brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010XL.
Where is Graham and his cameras? Because the last segment, the break was as passionate as it could be. But we're arguing about whether or not we could, A, spend $35 million quicker than we could spend $70
million. I would like the opportunity to spend $35
million. I think we all know the answer to that. We could all live with $35, but it sure would be nice to have $70. And we have argued tooth and nail during the break about whether or not we would rather be Big Shot Bob or Charles Barkley. There isn't a correct answer to this. It's the fun one that you do.
It's
with
what's
a Bud Light or
you.
A Corona. You sit there at the bar and you battle it out. And I do think essentially it comes down to, would you rather be the man or would you rather be a part of many great moments, which Big Shot Bob, Robert Horry we're talking about, was a not a central figure, a big piece of winning in Houston, San Antonio, L.A., there's a reason why he was on many different teams. I hope you Robert Horry supporters realize
Charles
that.
Charles Barkley was on Houston, Phoenix, and Philly. Same thing.
Yeah, but was also regarded as the man on each of those teams.
Okay, right.
Horry was on many teams because everybody knew once he got to the playoffs.
And they could rely on him.
He's a great role guy. He knew his role. He knew his role, and he could shoot. That's why he was on so many teams.
And I sincerely mean this. Are you jaded in your opinion of rings? because you were a Dan Marino guy.
No.
And what's the MO on Marino?
No.
He never won a ring. No matter how great he was, that's always the first thing that comes up.
I know, but I, like I always say, you're a ring guy, so that's why it's always going to come up. I think of Dan Marino, I think of one of the greatest players at his position I ever saw. And I would say that about Dan or about John Elway before he won rings. I would have no problem saying that.
What do you think?
And I would never look at John Elway any differently had he won a ring or not, because whenever they ran into a buzzsaw when they went to those Super Bowls. And Terrell Davis deserves as much credit for winning rings in Denver as John Elway does. So I haven't changed my opinion of it.
I would be curious, because, again, I know where you stand, you know where I stand. I would be curious if we were to go to the Town Center and ask the first 20 people that we see.
Right.
We see the name Dan Marino.
I think
what's the first thing to pop into your mind?
Yeah, I think the percentages would be higher as far as the ring goes. That's also because everyone has drilled it into every mindless person has drilled it into the other mindless person's head that's the only way you judge anybody, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah,
let's set aside everything he did. These passing yards, these touchdowns, these unbelievable seasons, the gift that he was given with an arm to go out there and throw strikes and have marvelous play after play after play on his resume tape.
What he did in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Yeah, and then the one guy walks up, oh, never won a ring. I mean, come on. It's a team game.
Matt?
I mean, clearly he's a Dolphin fan. Do we really need to go any further?
So are you on my side of this?
I've said before the break, now I'm saying during the break and now. I think I'd rather have the six rings.
Well,
I think at the end of the day, when you're 75, one guy made $35 million, one guy made $70 million, one guy's got seven rings, the other guy's got none.
Yeah.
And he's looking on his mantle, and there's seven rings there.
Yeah.
The other guy's looking on his mantle, and everything thinks he's funny on TV.
Yeah, which
okay,
he is.
What about
– he's unbelievable on TV.
And, hey, like I
unbelievable.
Said, I have no problem with y'all's argument. It's when someone has a problem with my argument.
I don't have a problem with your argument at all.
Yeah, I got no problem with it.
Right.
Because there's, like I just said to begin
with. But you are bitter about Marino with the Dolphin fan. There's no doubt about that.
No, I swear I'm not even. Like, it's one thing to get there and then to get your ass kicked like that. It really hurts. But
not
still,
bitter at all. No.
I'm not bitter at all. I don't even think about that. But I look at most of these guys. Like, we don't say that about baseball players. We don't even say that often about basketball players. We just started with this major argument. Some guy can win 20 times. You guys don't think he's a big deal, but it's the guy that won the major that you remember.
I basketball is different, at least for me. When I Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Reggie Miller, there's like an all non-championship team.
Was Reggie Miller not a great player?
He was a great player.
Was Karl Malone a great player?
But they never – in Miller's case, he was never really able to get over the Bulls.
Yeah,
and the one year he got over the Bulls
right, but just name,
was when Jordan was gone.
I know, but just name the people around him.
On that Indiana team?
Yeah.
That Indiana team was good.
Right. They were good.
Rick Smith, Dale Davis, Antonio Davis.
Everybody you named, good but not great. And so sometimes you're just – there has to be a foil in every movie, right? There has to be a winner and a loser, right?
Yes. You're breaking it down now, man.
I am.
Absolutely.
Because that's how it works. Sometimes everyone can't win the ring. Everybody can't. And you're just caught in the same time frame as another guy. Does that mean you're a loser?
No, we're not saying he's a loser. We're not saying he's
no,
a loser.
I'm just saying I look at Reggie Miller as a great player.
I do too.
I don't. I look at Karl Malone as a great player.
I do
Malone and Stockton, as good as it gets.
I agree.
Then why in society today, and I'll lump myself into this.
Right.
Why in society today is everything or almost everything in sports based on rings?
Because I think everyone's surface. Everyone's on the surface. They never dig deep.
Shallow.
Yeah, they never dig deep.
I mean, Michael Jordan, I look at him, I look at six rings. I mean, I could break down his great buzzer beaters and the great points
that
he scored.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Now, what do you think is going to happen with Golden State?
I think they're going to win a title.
Right.
They're going to win 4 out of 5.
Right, and you have stated that, you know, it's bad for the NBA.
I think it's terrible for the NBA.
Okay, well, who do we regard as one of the greatest players of all time? Michael Jordan.
Right.
And they won 6 titles in 8 years.
Yeah,
whenever he was on.
But it's
hang
different.
On now. Whenever he was. How is it different?
Why?
Whenever he
Why
was on the
different?
Floor, they won. They dominated. Did they ever get to a game 7?
In the finals, no.
No. And they dominated, but yet we look back with this fondness of that era and yet we pan what's going on right now.
Again, and I used the example last week, and this goes into the Kevin Durant argument,
right?
Well, which, by the way, Durant's very salty on Twitter.
Right. Well, I think we pan it now because the guy blew a 3-1 lead with OKC. The next year, he goes to the team that won 73 games.
Yeah, let's at least bring up Kevin Durant here in just a second. All I'm saying is what Golden State's doing will be special 20 years from now, but right now nobody likes it.
Right, but I thought I turned to you last week when I said if Jordan, who couldn't beat Detroit, he couldn't beat the Bad Boys, if he would have signed in free agency with the Bad Boys, that would have negated what Jordan did.
All right, let's keep this going because I just look at it differently in terms of there were great teams that had players come to them as opposed to them having to leave.
This is XL Primetime, brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010XL.
2:45, getting close to the French show. They'll be coming up at the top of the hour, having fun going back and forth. I love the hypotheticals. It's so cool when you think about what if, what would you be, what would you take, which career, all that type of stuff, which is always fun. We mentioned Kevin Durant. And, JJ, I don't know if you have the Instagram post pulled up, but Kevin Durant decides while Golden State keeps winning. They're 4-0 since the injury to Kevin Durant. 4-0 are the Golden State Warriors.
And Steph Curry is just drilling threes.
Yeah, which included them eliminating Houston in Houston and then winning two to start the series against Portland and then going up to Portland and winning. And, by the way, they trailed by double digits, I think,
last
in all three games.
Oh,
in
all three.
I was thinking Houston also. I can't quite remember, but it seems like they did.
Well, at least 16 the last two.
But at least he's last two. And
he's getting salty. And
maybe I'm thinking Curry was scoreless in the first half against Houston and then came back and went off. And he has been money.
He's hit 15 threes the last two games.
Yeah, and this is what he does. And more than anything else, the problem is, and I still believe Kevin Durant's the best player walking the planet right now, but it still lessens his impact because he's been an MVP and all this stuff. JJ, do you got one of the...
Yeah, so he's been on Twitter going at it with fans today, but this was yesterday. And keep in mind, if you don't remember this, Kevin Durant was the one who had the... Twitter burner accounts that he had to admit to because he accidentally was answering them as himself. Okay, so somebody yesterday, this is just very nothing tweet, says, doubt us without KD, ! Doubt Curry, Clay, and Dre, ! And keep thinking Milwaukee's better, ! Y'all doubters and haters will see, right? That's all it said. So KD responds, very divisive, Mikey. Let's celebrate this win as Dub Nation. What the F is wrong with you? It's like he didn't even say anything bad about KD.
Durant's getting very salty because he knows when they win the title, and they will, without him, that's going to be a bad mark on what Kevin Durant meant to that team.
It minimizes
the
two they won with him, is what it does. There's no doubt.
The other part of it, and like I said, I have been on the KD side. You can go where you want to go. But at the same time, he will then probably leave.
Right.
All this will follow him to New York, to wherever he decides to go, and it'll never end.
Never, until he wins another one.
Right. He might have had a chance to end this if he'd stayed healthy and was the main guy.
Isn't it kind of like LeBron? This. Do you give LeBron credit for the titles in Miami? I thought LeBron's justification came in Cleveland when he went back to Cleveland and won a title there.
I still give him credit for Miami.
Right, but I look at Miami, Bosch, Wade, Mike Miller, Battier, Ray Allen.
Was certainly a team that was –
you can't name all those guys. Can't name all those guys as if they did something to win. Battier went off in one game. Miller went off in one game.
They don't win one of those titles without Ray Allen.
Hadn't said his name yet.
Okay.
Because Ray Allen was one of the ones I mentioned earlier as far as better than Big Shot Bob.
Right.
Especially with that shot that he hit.
Look, LeBron's got three titles. Yeah. Absolutely. But I think the third one, when he went back to Cleveland, meant more, obviously meant more to him than the other two.
It absolutely did.
Okay, but I'm just going to submit this. The guy that he won it with, Game 7 against Golden State, was better than any of those other guys you mentioned. That includes Wade and Bosch. Kyrie was a better player at that time in that game than anything Wade or Bosch did.
You think Kyrie Irving in 2016 was better than Dwayne Wade in 2011?
In that game, Game 7.
Yeah.
Which included a game winner.
It did.
Joe.
That was
he played really well, yeah, but that's
the best player next to LeBron than those other guys in their wins.
Well, I just think of the bringing the title back to Cleveland, coming back from a 3-1 deficit, they're the only team to beat Golden State during this run.
Oh, it was special.
Yeah, I just think that vindicated what LeBron did.
Because
LeBron was looked at as the villain going to Miami.
No, I'm not taking anything away from that. I'm saying that was special.
Yeah.
My point is that I would give LeBron more credit in Miami, or just as much credit in Miami than as I would in Cleveland.
Let me ask you the same question. If Durant goes to Brooklyn or goes to New York, wins a title, would you give him more credit for that one than the 2-1 with Golden State?
I guess it depends on who he's playing with. There's no question I thought he was the best player on the floor with Golden State when healthy, but there's also no question that this team's pretty damn good without him.
Right.
That they have won and will continue to win without him. And that's the part that's really taking away from everything that he's done to this point. And then when he goes in on social media, which is just comical, it really is.
Now, the 2-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe!
At Moe's, our caterings have you covered from head to toe and especially stomach. Order your office event or tailgate catering today online at moescateringfl.com.
The Franzi show about to get underway. Frank Franzi joining us now. Frank, I got to get to the bottom of something that I saw on social media last night.
Bring it.
Game of Thrones got a lot of bad reviews, a lot of horrible reviews.
Right.
Yet apparently in the Franzi household,
there
was a lot of issues with the ending of American Idol.
Can you please
elaborate?
I walked in to the bedroom, okay, whatever time, 10, 11, whatever, I don't know what's over. I walked into the bedroom. My wife is sitting up, okay, in the back of the bed, screaming, I'll never watch this bleeping show again.
No way.
Suzanne using bad language.
Just trust me on this. I wouldn't embellish. This is radio. We're always honest. She said, I'm never going to watch it. Well, I don't know what she's watching, okay? But I know, I don't know if it's Housewives of Santa Clara, Beverly Hills, Minneapolis. I don't know what we're doing, okay?
Right.
And then she says it's American Idol. So apparently they're down to two dudes.
Oh, yeah. Alejandro and Lane.
Okay, do you watch it?
Oh,
I used to watch it back in the day all the time, way back to Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, sure.
So I said, well, did you vote? She said, I haven't voted since Fantasia. Okay. I'm not exactly sure when Fantasia was, but she hasn't voted since Fantasia. Anyway, so she says she'll never watch it again.
Yeah.
She was furious.
Well, the best guy didn't win.
Okay, so she was right.
She was right.
So then we'll get a kick out of it. Jordan DeArmond, our friend Jordan, used to work here. I'm not making this up. 1 second after Suzanne said that, I look at Twitter to see if Twitter's blowing up. And Jordan says, I'll never watch this again.
Yeah.
So I had to respond to
a lot of bad reviews last night.
So they didn't like that. But I'm not a Game of Thrones. But I'm going to ask the guys about Game of Thrones. I didn't watch it, but apparently people didn't like the ending.
Oh, my gosh,
never
Frank.
It.
You know how they are. On social media, they want to redo everything.
No, I don't watch it either. Do you watch it?
No.
So none of us. I think Hayes watches it.
Hayes was fired up, apparently, on Twitter.
I've watched a couple. It's just kind of slow.
Yeah, and I'm not criticizing. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
I figured I was just too old. But apparently everybody's all upset about that. But did you also know that the Big Bang Theory is done after 12 years and 279 episodes?
Yeah, and I never really totally got into that, although I like some of the characters. But, yeah, it had a great run.
But doesn't the world owe us Kaylee Cuoco and something else, Maddie? I mean, don't.
Is that the
It'll happen.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't
yeah.
we
That's
owed
happen.
That?
You know
that
what she is?
I was
you know,
way more upset about that.
That's going to happen. Hey, you know what she is for me, though? Seinfeld. You remember the episode where the girl, half the time she looked hot, the other half she
face? Didn't?
Yeah, remember that one?
Yeah,
the
yeah,
other half,
yeah,
she's
course.
Like,
take
you
her
catch
to
her
the
in,
diner.
Yeah, at the diner in the perfect light, she looked hot, and then she'd scare you. You know, she and that's
Kaylee Cuoco
just,
scared you.
I swear to you, I don't know, just like half hot, half not.
What's wrong with you?
What
man?
Part?
I don't
is
know.
Not.
I'm just telling you. That's just
when you know back when you were normal. When did this turn?
Listen,
when did you turn?
There are plenty.
What is the matter with you?
There are plenty.
Is it the beard?
No.
When you grew the beard, did it all change for you?
I don't know. There are plenty of them that I never have that problem with. Yeah. But I'm just asking. This is a serious question.
Have you recently had a neurological MRI?
No.
Because I think one's necessary.
Yeah, I think
so.
I'm not winning this argument.
No,
all
you
y'all
know, the, but what a week. Hey, OTA start tomorrow. Yeah. Brooks Koepka. Joe, you know more about golf than any of us.
Yeah.
Is this run better, not counting Tiger, one's Tiger, is this run better than all the others? Does Jordan, the Ricky, the Bubba, the DJ, is this the best run?
Tiger's was the best run.
Well, I know that. Yeah. I'm taking that off the ballot.
Yeah,
that's obviously the best
but
run.
When you're,
but
when you've won 4 in 8,
that's
right there next to Tiger.
It's the best run since other than Tiger, right?
Okay, because the only other guys that have done it are Jack, yeah. and Ben Hogan, yeah. and then, of course, Tiger. Yeah. So that means it's super special. And here's the great thing about it. When he won at Erin Hills, everyone says, oh, come on, it wasn't really a U.S. Open course. He's now won on some of the toughest tracks.
Yeah.
And I think that also lends credence to he's got the best game. He can draw, he can just cover
crush
any
it.
Number.
I mean, he threw a first round haymaker at the field. Mm-hmm. And kind of cruised for 3 days,
yeah.
didn't he?
Yeah. And then really had to hang on.
Yeah.
Like, you get to the 10th round, all of a sudden, the guy hits you right in the jaw.
That's right.
Like Deontay Wilder did. And all of a sudden, you're like, where am I?
Right.
And he was able to hold on. And he said the DJ chance ticked him off and fired him up. So
yeah, it did.
It was good.
All that coming up on the show today. Thanks, boys. Thanks.
Right, we haven't talked about this. 17 strokes he beat Tiger by.
Oh, well, yeah. Well,
first
Tiger just didn't have it. And we can get into that later. But just this very simple fact that Tiger, I've told y'all, he can – play Augusta with his – if he
right.
gets to
no,
line
right.
the shot up
I agree.
And then put a blindfold on it, he has a chance
I
to
totally
win
agree.
There every time.
Totally
Not
agree.
At these other places. All right, we're out of here. We'll turn it over to the Frangie Show, Monroe's Smokehouse Barbecue. Thanks to them. You will love their barbecue anytime, lunch or dinner, any day of the week. And if you're thinking about catering, get in touch with them at Monroe's, right there on Highway Avenue near Cassett, on beach between Southside and St. John's Bluff. Back at it tomorrow. Joe C., Ryan the Hacker Green, Matty Hayes, and Leon Searcy will rejoin us. JJ and his flock of interns. Good job as always.
XL Primetime out the door. We'll be out at Jaguar OTAs tomorrow. We'll join you at high noon on a Tuesday, but don't go anywhere. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline, Lauren Brooks, The Frangie Show is coming up next.